few extra handouts that you'll find there.
Okay, great. So I'd like to call this meeting, the regular meeting of the Captiva Erosion Prevention District to order at South Seas Island Resort. What is this, the Sanibel Room?
That's what they call it, yes.
This June 10, 2019 at 1 p.m. Call to order, Commissioner Jensen?
Here.
Commissioner Lanigan?
Here.
Commissioner Mullins here. Do we have a motion on the minutes of May 13th?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes from a regular meeting May 13th, 2019.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting. Motion passed unanimously. Public comment. Got a lot of public here today. Okay, the financial report ending May. Bob, you said was going to be late. You doing that, Carolyn?
Right. It looks the same, but right on track. It appears with everything, no major discrepancies or major changes. We did have less parking revenue come in, and that was our issue. We didn't get it deposited into May. It hit June. We realized it. So June will be higher, and May will be one deposit lower.
$700. Okay. Any other related to the monthly ad valorem budget? Okay. Anything related to the capital budget that we ought to be aware of?
No.
Okay. Okay. Old business. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Are we ready to get them online? Okay. Terrific. For the public's consumption, we were going to have the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers here in person. There's been a change of plans. We're going to get them on the phone and bring them in person at a future meeting. And Jackie Kaiser, who has been our representative in the past, is she and who else? Laurel?
Laurel Reichel. But it was just going to be Jackie.
It's just Jackie on the phone?
Yes. They don't have a direct line here, so I have to get the operator to make a call for us.
Do you think if we try my cell phone and put it on speaker that might work?
We could try that.
Yeah, you have a number?
Sure.
Hold on, let me get it up first. Go right ahead.
904-232-3915.
And this Jackie's direct number?
Yes. Leave it there in case you get
disconnected.
Jackie, it's Mike Mullins from Captiva. How are you?
Hi, good. Great to hear from you. Thank you.
Nice talking to you again. We're trying to call from my cell phone because there's an issue with the speaker phone here. So if this isn't working, we'll have to try again and get the operator to call you.
Okay.
How long are you going to be available at this number?
At least until 2 o'clock.
Okay. Great. So okay. Can anybody besides me hear this?
I can hear it.
Okay. So, Carolyn, do you want to sit closer and then direct your questions to Jackie?
And I'll let you know that Laurel Reichel is here with me.
Oh, she is. Okay. Yeah, I was asking about that. Hi, Laurel.
Hello.
On our side, we have several members of the public. We have Aptum here, and we have three of the commissioners on the board are present at the moment.
Okay. Are any of the commissioners out? Can you just tell me what their names are?
Yeah, so we have... he's relatively new, started about a year ago, Commissioner Lanigan. I don't know if you've met him before. And then Commissioner Jensen, you've met him before.
Yes.
And myself, Mike Mullins, and Commissioner Kaiser, your cousin, is not here today.
Okay.
And Bob Walter, the manager of South Seas Resort, is not here at the moment, but I think he's expected to come late.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I'm turning it over to Carolyn.
Okay, Jackie, we have your presentation up, and we are ready for you to begin.
All right, thank you. So give a lot of the history that's more or less for the new commissioners who may not be as aware of the
Excuse
history.
Me a second, Jackie. Okay. Anybody who wants to bring a chair up closer to hear better, please do. Just give them a minute to move some chairs up.
Sure.
We're in a big room without the best of acoustics, the one day that they give us this big room.
I'm sorry.
No, that's not you, it's us. So.
No, it's my fault. I should be there, and I apologize for
No, okay.
That.
Would you start again, please, Jackie?
Sure. So I'm going to skip through a little bit of the details on the history, but just stop me at any time if you want more details. But
okay.
My name is Jackie Kaiser. I'm currently the Supplemental Program Manager for the Jacksonville District and the Director of the Regional Sediment Management Center of Expertise. But back a few years ago, I was the Project Manager for Captiva, I think roughly 2003 to 2007 or 8, something like that. Well, I enjoyed a great relationship with you all, and I still love that project. Unfortunately, under my watch, 2013, post-storms in 2013, we had an FCCE, which is an emergency renourishment project that's supposed to be 100% federal. We were working towards that on Captiva, and that is when a real estate issue came up. The issue being that there potentially, or the opinion of some in the vertical team here in the Corps of Engineers, that there wasn't enough access and real estate on Captiva to have federal interest. So let me back up a little on that. So I believe you know that in order for the federal government to participate in shoreline nourishment, the property or the sands basically have to be open and available to the public because it's federal dollars. And what that means is parking on a free or reasonable basis within a practical walking distance to pedestrian access, and then currently perpetual easements for anywhere that the Corps has ever placed sand and paid for that sand. So the distance between the public access points cannot be any longer than a half a mile, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that was part of the 1996 design memorandum we did for Captiva. And
Jackie, quick question. Is it a half mile in each direction from parking?
It's a half mile total between public access points.
Okay, so if there's a public access point in the middle, is it a quarter of a mile each way or a half mile each way? Just want to be clear about that.
If there's one in the middle.
Say it's in the middle, and you can go south a half a mile and north a half a mile.
It's a. Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a quarter of a mile from either side of an access
either side,
point.
So it's a half a mile.
Is eligible for
got it.
Benefits, but it's a half a mile then between access points.
Between access points, got it.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you.
So back in the 1996 time frame when we evaluated, Captiva's cost share was down to about 27.72% federal. It starts out at 65%, that's kind of the max. And based on real estate and access, it goes down. And Captiva was one of our lowest at the time at 27.7%. That counted Captiva Drive, essentially, because we were counting that as a hurricane emergency evacuation route. And so it had benefits other than that of the beachfront itself. It was protecting that highway. So at the time, regardless of the public use and access, we were counting that. And every nourishment, we have a requirement to reevaluate the public use and access, with the idea being your cost share could theoretically go up if you provide more access, parking, et cetera, et cetera. So in 2013, we did our update. There was no changes per se, nothing significant, except that, and I'm just being open and honest here, there's somebody in the vertical team that happened to be in Captiva and had issues finding parking and access themselves. So they took special interest in our report. They disagreed with the allowance of Captiva Drive and some other things. And bottom line was, after many, many months of discussion, we'll call it, the cost share was reduced to 0.72%, which is basically nothing, and headquarters, actually General Jackson, sent a letter to you all that said, at this time we don't see there's federal interest in this project due to public use and access, and you're free to read, you know, make changes and get back to us, and we will bring you back into the program. But for now, we can't participate. And so Captiva, as you all know, went forward with the 2013 nourishment on your own, and we've basically been in a holding pattern without federal participation since. And so I am very excited that you're at least interested in talking with us about getting back into the program. And basically, I'd like you, if you go to slide number 7, that's really the crux of this discussion. We don't have any funding for Captiva Island right now. As you know, we're, I think, nourishing today, or we might have finished this weekend on Gasparilla in Lee County. It was 100% federal, and we could absolutely have that same type project on Captiva if we could work through this real estate issue. And the number one thing I need you all to do, and it's time is of the essence, because the reason I'm not there today is there's a new supplemental bill that was passed on Thursday. Corps of Engineers is getting together a list for projects that might qualify for that fund, and we could consider you all for funding on that if you could write us a letter that says basically you're interested in, that you'd like us to reevaluate the real estate situation at Captiva Island, which we'll send a team down, but also if there's been any changes since 2013, public use access easements, et cetera, you could include that in that letter. But at a minimum, just ask us to reevaluate. And that would trigger us to basically send a team of 2 or 3 people, or we could even do a desktop, you know, Google Earth type exercise to look at what you've got and tell you at least what you need and where your percentage lies in terms of construction. I want to be fully open and honest with you that since 2013, there's a stronger requirement towards perpetual each easements versus in the past they've been 50-year easements. So it could be a little more difficult to move towards perpetual, but that's just something to consider. All new sponsors are being asked to do that. It's something that's not an immediate thing. It's something folks are working towards. So number one is write us the letter requesting a new real estate evaluation. Number two, provide us anything that's changed. Number three, for this, if you are interested in us expressing capability for this new supplemental bill, we just need a ballpark understanding of, you know, what is the beach condition, how much volume might you need in a re-nourishment, what do you think that would cost, how far out are you, you know, do you need permits, do you need NEPA, do you need a borrow area, so we can estimate about how much that would cost. None of that, you know, imposes any requirement on you. It just asks us to start looking into it. Even if we got money in it, out of the supplemental bill for Captiva, it wouldn't require you to do anything. Nothing would happen until we get a more firm agreement from you that you want to move forward after we finally calculate what your new cost share would be.
So this basically, this letter is really requesting you come down, do an evaluation, and project a new cost share based on it, and we advise you of anything that has changed.
Right.
Okay, that part I understand. Can you clarify the perpetual easement issue?
Sure. So Corps of Engineers has to have easements for public use and access anywhere where we've historically placed and paid for the sand. So on that slide number 7, the last bullet under CEPD says, provide documentation showing CEPD paid for the fill, landlord of the ECL at initial construction. Laurel's here, and I'll ask her to jump in if she has any other information, but it's possible that if CEPD paid for that sand behind the ECL when we constructed, you would not be required to have those easements.
Okay.
But we've looked through our records. We're not seeing information either way, honestly, so it's something we could work towards together to do a little digging back to 1988 or so.
Is that when this would have been in the 88 project?
Yes, that was the initial construction.
So Jackie,
we
can
give
I
you
ask
the maps and let you know where we place sand behind the ECL, and that's, you know, we were looking for records that showed if you paid on top of your 27 or so percent cost share, that would have potentially been for that area behind the ECL.
Jackie, Jackie?
Yes.
So the design document for that project shows that, you know, the calculation was made to take out paying for the sand behind the ECL. And we didn't, CDPD didn't do the calculation.
God, I think that definitely helps, but if you have any financial documents, that's really the nail in the coffin. And we're going to dig, too. We got to get stuff out of, you know, warehouses and whatnot for 1988.
I think your document, you paid us in about 94 or so, $1.8 million for the federal share of that project. So you need to look around that date, I think, is when the reimbursement happened. Maybe it was, so it took a couple years before the economists finished with their evaluation, their counting of the documents.
Okay. And I think that all of that forensics could be part of this. When you request us to reevaluate, we can, you know, provide maps and sit with you somewhere, go through the parcel by parcel where we had construction behind the ECL and what our records are showing jointly. That could make a big difference. You know, there's a possibility that you could not have to provide any easements, but we gotta figure that out.
So, Jackie,
I am somewhat optimistic that there might be a different determination on the Captiva Drive issue, but I've got to work that with headquarters. But I feel, I don't want to, you know, get your hopes up too much, but I feel like there's something I could do about that.
Jackie, so this issue of the easements is sort of a two-part issue. One is, if we're able to produce the documentation showing the monies were paid for by CEPD, et cetera, behind the ECL, that sort of takes us off on the hook on the easements entirely.
Potentially. Yes.
More or less, okay? If, on the other hand, we're not able to produce the documentation, we would have to get new easements from the property owners.
Right, so...
That's sort of part B of the solution.
I don't think you had them before. Most of your cost share back in 88 and 94 and whatnot came from that Captiva Drive.
Yeah.
Giving you full credit for that. So we'll do the math either way, however it turns out, but I'm quite sure we can get your cost share above 0.7% just by relooking under the current guidelines and how, you know, how some other projects are being treated.
Sorry, Commissioner Lanigan has a question.
Yeah, as someone who's very new to this effort, can you describe what that easement would be like, what it would read like, and what it entails?
Yeah, I mean, I can send you immediately our standard easement language. It's, you know, it's fairly lengthy, two or three paragraphs, but it basically says that you're giving the public open use and access over that entire easement, and it's the same language we use all over the state. So Pinellas County, Gasparilla, any of those projects more or less have the same language. And, you know, I would suggest you talk with some of those, you know, Steve Boutel or anyone to fill you in on what that has meant for them and discussions that go on with landowners and how they get them to sign. I know there's hesitancy. State of Florida has a rule that, you know, the public is not allowed access into any dune areas. So folks in the past have had concerns about that. Obviously, there's laws preventing people from accessing any dunes.
We'll get your standard and read it before we discuss that further. But I am curious, on that same subject, is it every private property that has to provide such an easement, or is it just sufficient for you to be able to access the beach to do the construction work?
So it's every private property that had historic federal paid placement above the ECL. And that's where we'll look at those old design documents, basically the 1988 probably is what placed the most landward, and we would isolate which specific properties those are.
Okay,
and if you don't have them, it doesn't mean we can't work. It just means you don't get cost share for that property. So we would subtract out that footage as a portion of the whole.
Yeah, so subject to the fact that some properties have changed and combined and gone away or whatever, we have easements from before, which may not be adequate, but we should have easements for all, that would at least point us to all the properties that we have to deal with, I would think.
I think you have historically construction easements, and that was the standard before 1998.
Right.
And so, and we were allowed to just continue using those until it was objected to in 2013.
Right, so the point I'm making is we know where there were easements before, and even though they're now inadequate by the new standard, assuming they're inadequate, we would then have to try to get all of those individual easements updated, it sounds like.
Well, she was saying that those areas where sand was paid for behind the ECL.
You don't need it at all.
Yes.
Right, I understand.
So I think if they follow the design document, the 89 design document, if we follow that during construction, then that's possibly true. And they're saying that they need more proof than that design document that we provided.
Yeah, and I'm just basically breaking it into two components. One is we find the documentation that proves that sand was paid for by Captiva, right, and not the federal grant. And then the other part of the point is if we're not able to prove that and they don't accept the design document, what else would we have to do? And I think the answer is we'd have to follow this standard and upgrade all of these easements to that standard.
And my question is that, Steve, if I'm right, you're describing an easement just during the construction period, and Jack, are you describing a continual easement for public access? Is that right?
The standard earlier was a very looser easement that amounted to substantially a construction easement, and it allowed, you know, the CPD and the Corps to trespass on those properties anytime they needed to in order to maintain the project.
Okay.
So it was kind of language to that effect, and the newer easement adds on the public access in a much clearer fashion.
And my understanding is that all of the easements we have today, with one exception, were perpetual. I actually own the property that Mike Cohen owned at the time, where he actually had put a time restriction on it, so it expired. So that, to me, that's the one. So the wording of none of them is correct today. They all need to be upgraded to the current standard.
But if someone signed an easement offering their access to the Corps or whoever, after whoever's doing the work, just during the construction period, and, you know, for any construction period over the next 100 years, or perpetual, whatever it is, that's different than offering, you know, the public access to that easement. Okay, so am I right in hearing that Jackie's saying we have to offer the public access to that easement?
Yes.
Well, we do not.
Okay.
Since 1998, that's been the Corps policy, or roughly 1998.
Access seaward of the ECL, is that what you're saying?
Access within the easement region, in the dunes.
Okay.
In a sense, is what it said.
All right, well, we'll look at that separately. I just want to make sure we know the facts. So we have really the easement issue to deal with, and then...
Jackie, you'll send me that easement verbiage,
yes,
and I'll send it on to the
commissioners. She's also identified certain other areas, which we ought to reach out to them as well and see how they handle it. Anyway, sorry, Jackie, for interrupting. You want to go back to your presentation now?
I mean, that is honestly the crux of it. I think you all need to decide, you know, might you possibly be interested in moving forward with the Corps under this potential new supplemental bill? If so, and even if not, the supplemental bill, if there's a storm that were to hit Captiva anytime soon, you are eligible for FCCE, which is 100% federal dollars. You're eligible if you can show you've got reasonable real estate. So, you know, the last few storms, you know, we haven't really talked because that hasn't been expressed. But I think it's absolutely in your best interest to get this sort of insurance policy back on your books that you would qualify for that.
Jackie, can I just clarify one thing? It's Carolyn. So on the documentation showing that the fill landward of the ECL at the initial construction back in 88,
right.
We don't have to show the CEPD paid for it. We just have to show federal funds did not pay for it, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if, like, the state paid for it, that would be okay. If Lee County paid for it, that's okay. It's just the federal can not be the ones that paid for it.
It can't be federal dollars.
Gotcha.
Got it.
Okay. Good. Great.
Okay. Questions of Jackie?
Jackie, again, this is Michael Lanigan. When you send that easement document, could you also send, if you have a copy of General Jackson's letter to us
sure.
last time?
Yep.
We have it. Okay. All righty. Anybody else have any questions?
Oh, yeah. One last question. You mentioned, I shouldn't say it that way. I thought I heard you say that the federal government max was 65% and Gasparilla got 100%. Could you explain how I'm misunderstanding that?
Sure. So under normal fair weather, we'll call it circumstances, you know, a project has a renourishment interval, say every 6 or 7 years for Captiva. If there's no hurricanes in the meantime and we get to that 6-year time frame, we budget for your project. And under that circumstance, the maximum cost share for any CFRM that's not impacted by navigation or anything different like that, but a normal project, the max you get is 65% federal participation. And like I said, that goes down if you have less real estate requirements than you should have. If there's a storm that we deem basically significant, which is a major hurricane or storm event, and it removes a certain amount of material, it meets certain thresholds in terms of cost and benefit, then you're eligible for flood control and coastal emergency, we call it FCCE funding, which is 100% funding to normally to put back what the storm has taken away. But under this latest supplemental bill and the new supplemental bill, it will actually replace the entire template at 100% federal expense.
Thank you.
And Jackie, so do you know, was Hurricane Irma a large enough storm?
Yeah, so it varies project by project, but many of our projects in Florida did qualify under Irma.
Okay.
Jackie, did I hear you say that also provided we have the real estate? Is that even in the event of a storm, is that still a requirement? Is that what you said?
Yes. So just 2013 was actually the first time any project in the nation has ever been disqualified from FCCE based on real estate. So that was an unforeseen and unfortunate circumstance. Typically that, or historically, that had never been an issue. But
Jackie, I remember the first phone call I got from you where you talked about your role, and you were very helpful then, and you're still very helpful, and I understand that circumstances changed. I do know that we've had conversations with you in the past as to how one provides access. And I think that, you know, having a parking area every half a mile is ideal. But I think you also indicated that if we looked at, I'll say, shuttle buses or other vehicles that allowed the public to park in one location and still be able to get to the beach. Does that still sound like a reasonable approach for us?
Yes, we do have several projects that have shuttles that occasionally run, and that qualifies. Or buses, whatever. Any kind of way that people can get to the beach, the public, that's reasonable account.
Yeah.
And that's
now,
the sort of thing we could, you know, we would evaluate in our new, you know, report on the real estate access.
Now, we do have paid parking areas along the way. Are they disqualified because one would have to pay for parking at, say, Tween Waters or McCarthy's Marina? Do they qualify?
No, just an issue of if it's considered reasonable. So they just look at the amount that it costs.
Okay.
Jackie, can I ask you one question? Right now, Captiva has two predominant parking and access locations. So is that alone sufficient with reduced cost sharing, that is, reduced from the 65%, to support a project? Or do you have a feeling for what quantity would be adequate short of the every half mile access map?
Sure. So Steve, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, that's what gets you the 25%. In my opinion, the Captiva road, if we get that back into the project, which I feel like can be done, then you're good.
Okay.
It's that was the crux of the project getting kicked out in 2013. It wouldn't get you to 65 for sure, but you'd be around the 27. You know, we do the evaluation again, but at least you'd be back in the mix.
Okay.
And really, you know, as you know, what the big benefit is the FCC. Certainly we can help with the regular nourishment too, but 27% isn't anything to brag about. But if you're getting 100% on part or all of the project, that's huge.
So just to follow up, so is there anything else Captiva would need to do to maybe, let's say, make it look better in a sense? So right now they have, like I said, two major parking and access locations, and they want to get the road section in there. And I know in other places, and I don't want to name them, they negotiated long and hard about the number of access points and the number of parking spaces. And I probably was the same guy that came down here probably on his vacation to check out Captiva. So I'm just asking you from a purely, you know, make it look good point of view, is what we just talked about sufficient, or does maybe something else need to be done to make it look a little bit better and pass muster with some of the real estate bureaucrats?
Right. So some of the best things we have on our side of the core is that some of the players have changed. But secondly, what you could really do to help yourself, because some of the players are the same, need to be able to say something has changed in Captiva, even if it's, you can only say it's the sentiment and you want to work towards something. But somebody at the line is going to ask, so what has changed since 2013?
Well, I have a question. Yeah. It's sort of, no, it's relevant, but if South Seas was not part of the project and we had basically half the size of the project was half the size with the same amount of public space, would that look better?
We've talked about that before, Jackie.
So that would look better? I'm sorry, Jackie, what did you say?
She said it would.
Yeah, I mean, your percentage would certainly go up if you dropped that part. But
right.
Yeah, we could talk about how we'd work that separately, but potentially it would look better. But I'm not too worried about the numbers yet. It's more or less, we want to be able to tell the leadership, now, Captiva has seen the light. They understand public use and access is important, and they're making some changes, or they want to make some changes. And this is what our new analysis shows. And I have some things up my sleeve to show them how our own internal core policies have changed a little bit, and how that would reflect more favorably on Captiva's percentages. But like I said, this was a huge fight internally in 2013, and people are not going to forget that easily. So I need to tell them that something has changed.
I appreciate it. This has been very helpful, and we have our work cut out for us. But you know, there are some things that changed. But we'll get back to you on that, and we want to study the easements and the policies on this. So you've been very helpful, Jackie, as always. Anybody else?
Thank you. My apologies. I'm not there in person.
No, well, thank you. This has been helpful.
So I have a list of 13 questions that I don't want to go over today, but do you mind if I just send some additional follow-on questions to Jackie that maybe she can answer and clarify?
No, by all means, Steve.
Maybe we can throw some of the other questions on there just to make sure that we got a...
Sure. Did you hear that, Jackie? He wants to send you a list of 13-plus questions.
No, probably less than that because she answered most of them already.
Okay, anyway.
Sure, that'd be fine. Thanks.
All right, and... Laurel's with you as well, right?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Laurel, I haven't met you. Mike Mullins here. But anyway, thank you both for your follow-up on this and your time.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate
it.
Okay.
Look forward to hearing more, and I'm sending over that easement now, Carolyn.
Right. Great, thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
I'd like to stay on this subject for a couple of minutes to...
Can I mention one thing about South Seas Plantation?
Sure.
South Seas Plantation, from the core point of view, is a big zero,
yes.
Except for the first quarter mile.
Yes.
So the thing is, putting it in or taking it out from the core's point of view makes no difference. It does make a difference from the DEP's point of view. But there's nothing to say that our DEP and our core project have to be the same.
Yeah. The very first meeting with Jackie came before this group over 10 years ago, whatever it may be. She asked the question point blank, you know, why do you include South Seas? Because she said there's certainly some question about its value in terms of access. And you'd have, as much as we would get better access with the parking areas and other things that we do have if South Seas were not in the equation, because South Seas, except for the first quarter mile, is pretty much, as you say, a zero, we would also lose the apportionment that comes from. So, I mean, there's a trade-off there. In other words, we wouldn't be collecting money from the South Seas property owners. And so there's it's a mixed bag either way. It's just some, but that has been raised in the last year by people on the island as people have been reacting to the size of the apportionment and so on that they might have to pay. So a lot of questions have been raised. Obviously, we want to try to keep, we've had a successful program with the whole island, we want to try to keep that as best we can. So I think finding other measures is certainly our higher priority.
What I was saying is from the DEP's point of view, and for what you describe as your project, they don't necessarily have to be the same as the cores. So the core project can be this core element, and then you have these other things here, and everybody's always talked about South Seas being a worthless add-on in a sense in bureaucratic language. And it does a lot for Captiva. I mean, it's part of the project, contributes to the project, but strictly from a bureaucratic point of view, it doesn't give you any benefit from the core point of view. But from DEP and apportionment point of view, it probably does.
Sorry, David.
Steve, something that's always been in the back of my mind. 1988, Captiva and many coastal communities were way different than they are today in the sense of how people access the beach. Today, compared to 1988, many of the homes are like rental, like a motel. So to me, they are given public access by these access points that don't have parking, but yet because they park at their homes. And I just don't understand why things can't change from the Army Corps viewpoint and consider them public, because these homes are open for rent to the public. There's no restrictions. And I know that's a thought out of the...
Let me just answer your question really quick. DEP recognizes them if they're registered and as a hotel at the state level. And they register them, they recognize them for cost. The Corps knows about this and hasn't reached the point of recognizing that yet. Now, there are some people in... The head of the coastal program for the Corps is a guy named Joe Vitri up in New York District. And he's trying to get things to be more amenable in that direction. But he's really in charge of the technical aspect of coastal. And there's other people that are in charge of the real estate aspect. And those are the ones in Washington and the ones that are causing us difficulty. But somebody would have to go to the Washington group and change their mind on that issue. Right now, it's come up a lot of times and they've never gone the extra mile to make it count. And I understand exactly what you're saying.
Okay. To Dave's point, we have a few residents who've raised this question and some people who live at South Seas, one of whom wants to remain anonymous, but he's raised it a couple of times and he's actually met with some people from the Corps up in Washington and doesn't want his name revealed. But he's been fighting this argument and trying to make the case that these are really public, even though they're paying for hotels and so on. So that argument can continue to be made. There's some issues there, and as you say, it may help us on the DEP side in some cases. What we have to focus on are, in addition to trying to get that point settled, is these other issues of where, you know, for example, if we had along the Tween Water Stretch a certain number of properties that allow, they can't use the first piece of the beach. They own it, but they can't really use it for anything other than access to the beach. If we negotiated some parking arrangements with them, or if we negotiated parking arrangements at different times in the year, you used the example years ago about a nightclub in one of your communities that only really used the parking area at nighttime, and they were able to negotiate to be able to allow the public to park there in the daytime, and that counted as beach access. I don't know if you remember that conversation.
The hotel in Del Rey.
That's right.
And the thing is that Debbie Flack is much better expert than I am at that.
Yeah.
And you can come up with agreements that will be acceptable, at least to DEP, and I don't know what it will take to, but it's worth probably talking to the Corps about what type of an agreement would substitute for purely public. I mean, your access point right now, right here on South Seas Plantation, kind of, it's on more than one parcel, and none of them are really owned, not totally public. So if you see what I'm talking about.
Yes. And all I'm saying is that we have to be creative in the possibilities. And we've talked about this in the past. We just didn't pursue it. But we have to be creative in the possibilities to show greater public access. Even if we, you know, can't use the argument that when somebody rents a house or rents a motel or whatever it may be, that that counts as public access. So, and I'm not expecting you to give us an answer, but I said you've suggested some in the past. We looked into some of them. We need to do it, you know, more aggressively. And it's good that they've got money, and it's good that she's saying they could be more flexible on the tween water stretch, I think is what she was referring to, but the Captiva Drive area. And I guess we ran up against one particular person who was on the vertical team that visited here and had some issue and argued against it. So anyway, so we have some work cut out for us there.
You're not the only one that he is he has victimized.
I don't know who he is, but that's okay. I don't need to know either.
I don't know who it is. Yeah. But I know he's not in Georgia anymore.
Yeah, okay. And maybe it's somebody who's standing on principle about something. So anyway, but we have some work cut out for us. We know we have had that in the past. It would be interesting to see, now that we make this request of her and we get an approximate idea of what the percentage is, that we could do a cost-benefit analysis between what the increased cost of the project might be if they run it versus, you know, getting this money. It sounds like having it available for the emergency that you referred to alone has some value that we should consider.
Well, they're saying 100% this year, which is unbelievable. And I want to just mention one thing on Fire Island. My project up in Fire Island, I built it in 2009, and with Sandy, we lost damn near 100% of that sand due to Sandy. So if a big enough storm comes, you can literally lose all the sand from the last immersion project. Now, we've been lucky in Florida that we haven't had a storm quite of that parameter, but in a sense, Peel 99 can be a, or FCCE can be insurance. And so if you sign up for the core program, if your cost sharing is low, Peel 99 can kind of be an insurance in case if something really big happens.
Yeah, recently I think it was, I put out an article that, I think it was in the Bradenton area, and I think it's a Treasure Island that's up there, but where they got, because they had good access, they got 100% reimbursement after a storm. But I think it was also due for a nourishment, and the feds paid for the whole thing. Anyway, so we have some work cut out for us here. Thank you for coming back from the dead, Steve. getting bored with retirement? I'm kidding.
Well, usually, Cuyahoga County keeps you busy.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, the next subject is the Redfish Pass Sand Search and Borrow Area Design, which we talked about briefly. I'm a little bit confused here, though, because I read the minutes of the last meeting, and I'm reading the item on the table today. Did we get something clarified? I think we were trying to find out whether we wanted to go ahead and approve this before we knew whether the Board of County Commissioners was going to fund it.
Right, so we were trying to get this approved at the last meeting to be done this fiscal year.
And we pushed it off to 2020 now?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
However, I talked to Nancy Stroud, and she said, we can approve this now and have the work done in the next fiscal so that it's all set up to go.
All right, but is it necessary for us to say, because I read the resolution, that it's contingent upon getting the approval by the TDC and the Board of County Commissioners?
That's up to you if you want to wait, you know, if you...
Well, we're not starting the project until 2020, is what you're saying, right? I'm trying to remember the conversation. I forget who it was brought it up. I think it was one of you two that brought it up, either Mike Lanigan or Dave. But do you remember what the issue was last time?
Well, I don't remember, but it's now I'm understanding what you're saying, though.
Right. So we don't have the funding for it to happen right now. Yeah. We've submitted the funding request to the TDC and also the DEP. And both of those have moved forward in their cycle, may expect them to be approved, but we won't know for certain.
And when is that?
When they approve their budgets for this coming fiscal year. And
which
it will be in this coming fiscal year.
It's like in the fall.
Right.
You know, my question to Michelle and Steve is, you know, there's a possibility, I think, from what I've been hearing from the board, on this source is that we may not want to use it for a project, but use it for an emergency basis. And if we're leaning in that direction, this survey of the Bauer area, does that stand permanent as a record to be able to use it? If it's 5 years from now that we had an emergency, 12 years?
Yeah, so this sand search, this sand investigation is just a one-time deal. So you'll do the sand search and then you'll go through you'll get a permit modification to add Redfish Pass to your existing permit to have that as a sand source as well. So, yeah, it doesn't, you know, as far as the timing, you do it now, you can use the source 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and you don't have to use it right away. It's getting it added to your permit so you have it available.
And how long is our permit good for, or that?
Your current permit expires, I think it's 2020, and that's good for another 10 years, I think. It's a 15-year permit, so I think there's another 10 years on that.
And we've been dragging old borrow areas forward to the next permit with nothing more than including its drawing in the next permit allocation.
Right.
So we have two borrow areas out there right now that we probably put together in the 80s or early 90s.
So you do the same thing again. Once this permit expires, you would just apply for a new permit and add the same borrow areas again.
And this, I'm just looking at the minutes. This project is going to cost $350,000 to make sure that this borrow area is adequate or for our needs. And we're trying to determine whether it's going to provide 300,000 cubic yards, 300 cubic yards to a million cubic yards. Is it?
From the minutes, it should be 300,000.
Yeah.
Cubic yards.
That's just one minor mistake in the minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what this project will do. Determine the.
So that's the. That's the focus. Yeah. I mean, of course, we don't know. There's millions of cubic yards of sand in Redfish Pass, but as far as what's, we've found the areas where it would be safe in terms of impacts to adjacent beaches to excavate that material. And so now we have to make sure it's actually the quality that you're going to want it on the beach, and that can be permitted to be placed on the beach. So.
How do we fund this? What account does this come out of?
Through the DEP as a grant and through the TDC as a grant.
The issue, as I recall last time, was if we started the work in the summer prior to, we would not be getting reimbursement for work that's already done.
That's
we need
correct.
To get, yeah, so we want to move this to the future so that we get the approval from them ahead of time, right? And so the open question was, should we put it off and et cetera, and I think you've answered that. There was another question as to, which I think I asked last time, which is in the minutes, about whether we would have exclusive rights to the sand, and the answer was answered then, we do not. Is there a risk to us of losing this in any fashion? Is there anybody else that'd be likely to go away? I mean, I don't see offhand, maybe North Captiva, but.
So I think, closed, the original stress really is on the south side.
short, somebody wanted to get a permit to use that source path to align with the study. And right now, you know, it's showing that Capsula needs that sand to address the erosion effects.
On an emergency basis, though.
On an emergency basis.
Yeah, so suppose, for example, an emergency has already existed on Sanibel. The two folks sitting behind you are going to be planning a nourishment project most likely at some point in the future, near future probably, to deal with the northern end of Sanibel, south of Blind Pass, right? So would they qualify for use of this sand?
That's a good question. I don't know. There's, like I said, in the management study right now, or the plan, Red Fish Pass isn't identified as a source for.
Okay.
It's really about, you know, the inlet and the impacts of the inlet, and using that sand to address the impacts of the inlet. So
okay, Steve had his hand up. Maybe he's got an idea.
What I could say is, if they were going to use that inlet, they need to use a powerhead drag. So that means they need to put a pipeline down your beach over the inlet.
So it's not likely.
So the thing is, it's somewhat impractical. I'm not saying it's completely impractical.
They would likely truck in, is that right, James?
For the emergency project, in relationship to the structure that we're designing right now, it would be a truck haul. Project for that specific thing, but we're looking at longer term, you know, be probably partnering with a bigger beach immersion tournament.
Yeah, so we should be talking about that separately after
right.
You get past the emergency, and that would make sense.
We're not looking at any major beach immersion projects independent of what you guys are doing right now.
Okay, so we'll have a separate conversation
Absolutely.
About that, but and it's probably cheaper to truck it in than it is to put a cutter dredge
in.
Smaller
volumes, it is.
Yeah.
If they did a bigger project, it might be, I think it would be most effective offshore to use one of the offshore power rather than use the inlet, because they'll use a hopper dredge, and a hopper dredge is easier to bring it to that area than taking it out of the inlet and piping it
down. Okay. So the item on the agenda calls for the a motion on the resolution.
I do have one more question.
Sure, go right ahead.
So, is it safe to say there is a possibility we would consider using it as a source of sand for our project coming up, or not?
It doesn't sound like it, because we're not... Go ahead, Steve.
We talked about this over lunch, and I think mixing a cutter head dredge with a hopper dredge, because you're going to have to use different dredges on those sand sources, it's probably better. It's not good to put them together. Unless there was a real, real good reason that you had to. If you had to put it together, you might just bid it, so let the contractor decide what to do. And I just think that contractor, unless he has both dredges available, he would probably just bring one dredge. One advantage of that sand source is it does use the cutter head dredge, and sometimes the dredgers have all of their submerged pipeline and hopper dredges busy. So that could be an emergency circumstance where you might want to use Redfish Pass because there was nobody reasonably available in the hopper dredge.
I like what I think your idea was, though, that we would put it out to the contractor to make it available as a possibility when they bid their price. And if it made sense for them, if they had them both available, somebody might have a financial advantage that would help us in taking the sand from there as well as going out to the other borrow area. So by giving that option, it sounds like you're saying let the contractor come back and bid accordingly.
Yeah, I think that would, if you decided you wanted to use it, that would probably be the best way to use it.
Yeah. Did you follow that, Carolyn, what we're saying?
I think so.
Yeah.
But part of the consideration there is knowing the volume of sand in that inlet and how often we can use it, because I mean, this is like having a little insurance in our back pocket if we need a renourishment after a storm, and you know, having that closer and have a different sort of dread, whatever. So if we use it in part of the mix for the upcoming renourishment, well then we may lose access to that in a pinch after a storm. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's right. And that's one thing we talked about a little bit in the last meeting, was the infilling rates of the acquirers. So had, say that smaller volume, you're looking at a decade or so for it to regenerate that same amount of volume. And if you take the larger end of that, the million, you're looking at 30 or 40.
the next time you would have that million cubic yards available again. So we looked at that. That could be, you think of that as either like a take a million and maybe kind of a one-time use for the next few decades, or you use an emergency basis and you might be able to use it again.
In the context of our earlier discussion that was raised about South Seas and the fact that we might be able to look at funding from, you know, the state and the county for the South Seas area and the Fed just for the other area, I'm not proposing this. I'm saying this is what I heard was raised in the earlier conversation. So is there a potential of using the Redfish Pass area to do the nourishment on the South Seas side and then getting the federal project to deal with the borrow areas further out? And which is the hopper and which is the cutter? The cutter is in the inlet?
Cutter's the near-shore source. Hopper's the hopper.
So you could actually almost do them as two separate projects. They don't have to be... I'm thinking out loud. I don't know this business as you do.
You could break the project up and get them as two separate ones. Okay. And so the what'll, the advantage of the Redfish Pass source, obviously closer to shore, the cutter head very short pump distance, so you've got a really low unit cost for the sand. Mm-hmm. You're still mobilizing a whole, you know, another dredge.
Right. Well, that's back to the idea of if the contractor has them available and they're in the vicinity, there's an advantage to that. So, I would like to read the... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. If, just so I understand, if we decide we don't want to move ahead with the geophysical and geotechnical part of the Redfish Pass study, can somebody else come along and say, well, we do, so we're going to do it?
To do the study? It would have to be somebody that would have an interest in using the sand, and I guess I would go back to the, the issue at hand with the erosion that's caused by the inlet. So there's, you know, it's really just Captiva and North Captiva that have an interest in.
I think only North Captiva would really have an interest. I can't see any reason why anybody else would want to use that thing other than those two items.
But that's a good question, thinking somebody's coming our way. So that's a topic of discussion around the state.
Okay, I'm going to read the resolution fast, and then perhaps somebody wants to make a motion to go forward with it. Or should I ask for a motion first? I don't know which
one. Are we going to discuss it?
We would discuss it after a motion during the discussion period. You need a motion made and seconded, and then we can have further discussion. So is there a motion to?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, I'm going to read the resolution. Resolution number 2019-03 by the Board of Commissioners of the Captiva Erosion Prevention District, whereas the CEPD is authorized by Chapter 2000-399 Laws of Florida as a beach and shore preservation district, and whereas Section 4, Powers of the District, Paragraph 4, authorizes the district to adopt rules for its own government and proceedings, and whereas the district has adopted rules of procedure last amended on January 7, 2019, and whereas Rule 1.23 parens D of the district rules of procedure provides that a resolution stating budget and progress and purposes shall be required to initiate any project exceeding $25,000, and whereas the district desires to initiate such a project exceeding $25,000, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Commissioners of the Captiva Erosion Prevention District that, Section 1, the district approves the expenditure of $349,932.25 for the project described in the Apton proposal for Redfish Pass sand search and borrow area design dated February 8, 2019. The project purposes are for Apton to conduct a comprehensive geophysical, geotechnical sand search. For Redfish Pass, Apton proposes an investigation consisting of desktop study, geophysical, geotechnical, and cultural resource surveys to collect information to characterize the sediment source for use in the design and permitting of a borrow area. This work will not begin until fiscal year 2020. So we've had a motion made and seconded, the resolution read. Any further questions, discussion?
My question is, just to be clear, the only risk I'm hearing is if we do this work and we haven't gotten the money from the county because after the fact reason. So the way we're doing this, we're not at risk.
Correct. We would not start any of this work until after we learned that we got the funding from the TDC and the DEP.
And that's the last sentence. The work will not begin until fiscal year 2020. That's what Okay. If we get turned down by the TDC, or that we have the opportunity to
cancel this? We could amend and cancel it.
By doing this, then, do we sign a contract with Aptem?
We can.
But we don't,
we
that's
don't
not
have
part
to.
Of this. Okay.
Correct.
So we're just approving through resolution the money,
so this is our,
yeah, authorizing this to be done in the future, okay, pursuant to the contract.
Okay.
Further questions? Call the vote. Commissioner Jensen?
I say yes. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Okay, fiscal year 2019-20 draft budget. It's a I need a motion to approve the tentative general budget. We can have discussion after a motion has been made.
I'll make the motion to accept the tentative budget.
Second.
Okay. Before we take the vote, the idea is that we must submit an application to the property appraiser on August 4th, advising them of our new millage rate for the ad valorem, that's the annual budget. And whatever we approve today, we can decrease in the September budget meetings, the tentative and the final budget meeting. I've always felt one goes a little higher now because something might come up between now and then, and there are things we might want to do, but you can't go back and change your budget after the fact. So the thought was, I had asked certain things be included in the budget. This is a worksheet. We can discuss it at length, and we will be discussing it at length in September.
So an updated
go right ahead.
Budget yeah. was distributed. Open to amendment.
Hold on.
Way too hard to right. One is the capital, and we're talking about the general.
Okay.
Capital is included for information purposes. So what we had discussed was making the budget so that our expenses, our general operating expenses, were $600,000. I didn't actually pop those figures in. I had figured it out. If you look at that last column at $568,981, easy enough to, you know, put money into different categories and get it to hit the 600.
Sure.
I did create what the 600 would do, and if we set our operating budget at 600,000 and we take out the amount in our interest and other monies that we make in the TDC grant, we would need to come up with 556,550, which is a millage rate then that we would ask for of 0.0004045. Which is actually a 31% increase.
Yeah, let me. I have, you're going a little fast for me. Where is that millage rate that you just talked about? The
there's,
points.
A dark section right here. In the
okay,
middle.
I got it. And that's the millage rate we would be asking for, or that's the increase in the millage rate?
That is the millage rate that we would be asking for.
That's from 0.29 or something.
Yes.
That is the third. That's the third.
Increase. Yeah, it's 31% increase.
And then.
Hold on, there's three zeros before the four here. Is that what it was previously? I thought
yes.
It was, okay. Subject to the calculation, so the idea being, again, that we're asking for more money. We can talk about that in a minute where we might use it. So if you go in with this number, 0.004, what it means, the other alternative is we go with a rollback rate or some lower number. Okay, rollback rate means that we're not changing our, is it not changing the millage rate or not changing the budget from the prior year? I forget which. But.
Not changing the millage.
Okay. The difference, though, is that we do two separate advertisements depending on which one we choose. If we are not increasing the millage rate effectively or increasing the budget effectively, we do a routine type advertisement. If we're increasing it, and I don't know whether there's a percentage involved or whatever, but we have to do a different advertisement that says we're raising our taxes, essentially.
Correct.
And I'm comfortable with doing that and letting the public know that we're raising it, whatever number we choose in September, because I'd rather go in high knowing that if we justify and we all agree on what needs to be spent, that we've already taken care of it, as opposed to going in low and then discovering after the fact that we've overlooked something.
I agree. My reason at this point, because we know we can cut back at the end there, Chairman Mullins, I think you, your effort on bringing up what we can do for shoreline protection, the sea level rise, you know, we may want to start dealing with stuff like that sooner than later. So, and I think that'll give us a little time till September to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. So, I have a question. So, where, if, so is this $600,000 kind of the number we're looking to generate in revenue on this millage rate?
Right.
So, where is the $400,000? Because if this is a basically a third increase, that.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the,
I guess 450. Oh, yeah, pardon me, 450. So where's the 450? Oh, there it is, over there. Yeah.
Very first.
So, okay, perfect. Thank you. So this is four. So we're going 450 to 600. Got it.
And down the road.
Yep. And it's
of
a big.
No, there. Thank you. Yeah. Can be used towards the re-nourishment to bring down. Right.
Yeah. Whatever we don't spend just rolls forward to reduce future assessments. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the headline that we're raising something by a third is kind of, you know, that doesn't sound good. But it's, how much is this on a property worth $1 million, assessed at $1 million, do we know? Or $600,000?
It's right now?
No, that's right.
$100.
Yeah, so basically our millage rate ends up being, you know, it's modest, insignificant, really.
Well, there's 1,200 properties. Yeah. Okay, and obviously they're all over the place. So if you did an average, it's, you know, $120,000. It was $100,000.
So. Okay. Well, we can deal with it.
This is based on the property appraiser's estimated value of the very top and the very top number of 1,462,943,000. So 1,000,000,004.
Right.
And that could even go up by the time they give us a final amount on July 1st.
Let me mention that for a second. First of all, we have often canceled, we didn't last year, but we have often canceled the July meeting. We don't have to this year. I think we need to talk about that in the meeting. But the reason we're talking about this now with a worksheet is to say if we don't have a July meeting, there is no opportunity, except we called an emergency meeting to deal with it before the August 4th deadline to get this back to the property appraiser. So that's why we started working on this actually last month, and we're doing some preliminary work to be prepared. If we have a July meeting, we can revisit it again in July, because we're still ahead of the deadline of submitting the DR, 420 to the property appraiser. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I favor doing it. I actually asked for the $600,000 number, which is a big increase, and I'd rather have the public come out and see that we're doing this big percentage increase and raise questions and understand what we have in mind. I have no issue with being prepared to discuss it, and if the feedback we get, or if we reconsider, or if any of the board members wants to lower it, you know, we have the opportunity. The votes that count are the votes that are in September. Now, having said that, you know, one of the things that I wanted to add extra money for was if we should. I have no idea how we would spend this money vis-a-vis sea level rise. I mean, this is something we would have to evaluate and look into in the future. I do know that the panel has seen some consultants do some bids for them. I don't know what that is, whether it's reasonable or not. I don't know if this is something that Aptum has experience with and is looking into these. You know, we'll look at all those alternatives before we settle going forward. Even if we approve the budget in September, we still have a lot of work to do vis-a-vis request for proposal, and we haven't even scoped out what the work is. This is strictly a contingency. So is there a motion to...
You had a motion from Dave and a second from Mike.
Okay, so is there any further discussion on the subject? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I should point out that at the very end, there was a legal memorandum from Nancy Stroud basically saying that she considered this to be within the purview of the district to look into this and do some work on it. So, okay, tentative apportionment update.
So, commissioners, we were asked to look into the possibility of getting some private,
appraisal?
Yes, thank you. Some private appraisals on a couple of properties, one of them being the Captiva Golfway, that little 40-foot and then the other one being the land for Sunset Captiva that we're having so many issues with. We sourced out an RFP to two different companies, and one of them came back with a quote of $8,600, and the other one came back with a quote of $6,000. Our feeling, and we've talked with Chairman Mullins about it, is that this is seems really high. The other challenge that the administration has is we're a little bit tentative on doing this kind of thing. We're a little bit scared of what it might open up. If we go out there and get our own value assessments, then what's to stop somebody else from saying, well, pay for the assessment for mine. I just don't want to open up that big, huge box of worms. And I could be worrying for nothing, I don't know. But I'm here to help you guys cover
it. Let me try to explain the background of why I asked that we get these. We have a proposed apportionment from The Economist for the Gulfway. I'll use that as an example. We have a similar situation in Sunset Captiva. And aside from the fact that there's been a huge reaction, which we knew would be the case with the Gulfway people because they haven't been paying any apportionment for a while, and we think that needs to be redressed, et cetera. The feeling was that the county property appraiser does not put a value on a 40-foot wide strip of land that goes from Captiva Drive out to the erosion control line, or out to the Gulf for that matter, because you can't build anything on it. So they don't bother to. And I've had conversations with Ken Wilkinson years ago, and we've had a number of approaches we've taken on this. Our economist took an approach, which we said, fine, send a letter out or go with it. We're not even at that point where we're sending the letter yet, but we wanted to get some interest from the people who own this property. But it turns out it's a corporation, a not-for-profit corporation that's owned by a certain number of shares, if you will, shareholders, and they use it as an access to get back and forth to the beach. There have been some irate members of that, organization that feel that they're being hosed and they have some problems and whatever, and they think it's a personal vendetta of Commissioner Kaiser, who is the adjacent property to it, but I think that's not the case. We think they should pay something. Some of the people who have approached me, I'll mention Bill Riley as an example, is one of the shareholders. He asked me, what's up? I said, it's very early to be worrying about it. We'll have some facts. But I did, share with him that I thought that they should be paying something, and we've tried to take the approach with Nourishment that everybody is paying something relative to getting a benefit. They are a storm-damaged, or storm-benefited area, so it could be, a lot of money involved in covering that particular area. I personally thought that the solution that our economist came up with, which was to take the aggregate value of the properties on the Bayside that we assume are the owners of the shares in this corporation, will not stand the test, and we could ask Nancy to look at that, but it's not going to pass muster legally, because these people could transfer shares to somebody else. The fact that they own a house and they also own a share in this corporation, It's a bridge too far to connect the two, in my opinion. And it also makes the amount of money they pay very significant, because it's the aggregate value of seven properties. So I can't think of any other way. So one approach, and it doesn't have to be approved today. I don't mind if we think the prices are too high going out getting more proposals. I was a little surprised that they are what they are. But nevertheless, the idea is you've got to come up with a value on that. And similarly, we were trying to look at the Sunset Captiva. And I spoke to one of these private property appraisers, Matt Simmons, and he explained on the front end, I don't think I've spoken to him since he's done a proposal, but he explained on the front end that if there's nothing comparable, you can't find a similar property, it means a lot more work has to be done, that's why it's more expensive. It's a logical argument, I just don't know how to put a value on what it should cost. But the idea is that we somehow have to come up with a value. And to me, that separates the ownership of the corporation from any houses on the other side, because the fact of the matter is that it could be a coincidence that they're related, but you can't legally make the connection. So I asked that we get an appraisal from Matt Simmons, because I actually have used them, and I'm using them currently, so it was just somebody that I knew. I'm happy if we go out and ask, five other appraisers or whatever. I don't know if anybody else has had experience with them or anybody else. I have no idea who's going to do a good job here as far as private property appraisers go. But I think we need some facts in the fall, and we need to come up with an alternative approach, or we could just let it fly with the way that, that Bill Strong has done it, except I would prefer to get Nancy's opinion on whether or not he's made a too big a leap on how he's calculated that number. So, anybody else have an opinion on this?
When you mentioned Bill Strong's name and Nancy's, I think it boils down to their blessing on this. And I'm a little concerned if Bill came up with that initial idea, blending the Bayside ones as his option. You know, do we have to get Nancy more involved to and find out if we're going, by getting these appraisals and considering that route, should we find out if it's defensible before we...
I have no problem with that. That sounds reasonable.
And I think Carolyn's concern is a real concern I have, too. You know.
Yeah, Carolyn, I think you make a good point. I do think Bill's methodology is really impaired, and I think a bridge too far is a good metaphor. So I know, I feel confident that's not the best way to go. I do think that they own an asset, and our renourishment project enhances that asset, so I believe they should pay something, and I don't know what that number is. And I think this is a good way to try to put a number on it. I suppose we should be cautious and get some sort of our attorney's support or opinion on it. So, you know, I like the idea. Maybe subject to our attorney's. Go ahead. Yeah, please.
I asked Nancy about this in the course of talking to her about a bunch of different issues.
Yep. Yeah.
And she was of the opinion that a second look at the county property appraisers work by the CEPD would open the door for a series of disputes that would be costly and time-consuming and threaten the apportionment methodology. Bill, as a district economist, should at least have an opportunity to provide his input. And I asked him, he's been non-responsive. So, just from the administration standpoint, looking at protecting the district as much as possible, I think it would be behoove the board to get something perhaps official from Nancy other than just a conversation I had with her. And I would think you should get Bill on board big time on how to approach this. I can't imagine that this is a situation that's unique to Captiva. There's got to be other places around the state of Florida that have similar situations that those districts or counties have struggled with how do we handle apportionment on a piece like this.
At this point, I would say we table it and we can ask Nancy for further input. I don't necessarily agree that there's this risk that is being perceived. You somehow, if the property appraiser will not put a value on it because he doesn't think he can raise taxes on it. I've tried to argue the point with him before. He said there's private. I think he confuses it with the easements that are on private properties as well, that there are easements, and he said that's between the homeowners, et cetera. But let's deal with that separately. There's no rush to get it done now. I think it would be nice to have it before we go out with a tentative apportionment at the end of the year or the beginning of next year. So we'll table it, and we'll send an official letter to Nancy and Bill asking for clarity. Bill did tell us what he was doing on the front end. I don't think we understood all the ramifications of it. And the reason we kind of went along with it is to say they've been sort of, some of them have been running away from us in the past. The property appraiser said he's had a hard time getting them. At least now we've got their notice, their interest, and that's what we wanted to do. The Sunset Captiva is a little bit different. And they, you know, I think that, I don't know how one puts a value on that easement out there. But again, in both cases, I would ask, you know, Nancy to give us her input on that. And I don't know. I mean, we may have to find another alternative. But I definitely think that we're stumped with the issue right now, and we'll look at it again in the future. So, is that okay with everybody?
Sounds good.
Okay, so... Is the motion out there? The motion's out there, so we do need to have the...
withdraw the motion. You need to withdraw the motion, whoever made it.
You may not second.
I'd like to withdraw the motion.
I second that.
To withdraw?
To withdraw.
Are we going to talk, Mike, about other things under that title, the kind of apportionment? Or is that just the update?
We certainly can. You have something else that you wanted to...
Well, I need my brain refreshed on what other issues do I anticipate that we want to resolve before we put out our final thing? Or did we decide these were the only issues?
No, this is not they were the only issues. There are other issues. This subject item was strictly to see whether, in order to move forward on resolving the issues, did we need private property appraisals.
Okay. The other issues, there are just a series of just these ad hoc type properties come up, and you know, you've got a castle here, you've got a, you know, shack here, and the shack's paying more than the castle. That's going to be a case by case basis. Is that kind of how we're, you know, okay.
Just to
owners are going,
guys, we can't have a free for all discussion. It's got to be.
Well, I'd ask Joe a question.
You asked a general question.
Well, I was looking right at Joe.
In any event,
seem...
I'm happy to pass the gauntlet if that's what we want. So I'm just saying, we're getting off in tangents. We are only trying to get a tentative apportionment done at the end of the year. That's the point I'm trying to make. And once we get that tentative apportionment, we're going to do the best job we possibly can. And then we've got a couple of years, and if there are individual objections and issues and ad hoc things that come up, we'll deal with them. And I just think that we're not going to resolve every situation that we possibly can with these homeowners before the tentative apportionment is approved at the beginning of next year. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay, so that's why you entrusted my conversation.
Mike, I don't want
to
miss
it. Dave asked, is there anything else? Did you hear? Could you read them? Dave asked, is there anything
and
else?
And I thought I answered it. That it
I brought something up.
Okay, but what's on the agenda...
And I don't think we should wait until the end of the year to address
that. Excuse me. What's on the agenda is strictly a very narrow, and I answered that question. It's a very narrow point about whether we hire a private property appraiser or not to look at these two individual properties. And Dave said, are we going to talk about others? And the answer was, not now, but before the end of the year.
No, that's not what you said. We could do it right now.
All right, then I stand corrected. Go ahead and do it.
I tried to. So anyway, as ad hoc issues, I left a voicemail for you guys last week offering to come by during the week to kind of work with you to go through these things and see if there's any consistencies in the inconsistencies and things that we can identify before. You know, we've got some downtime here, it seems. I don't want it to be a complete, you know, I have some spare time. So my summer is a little bit slower than the rest of the year. So I do think we should try to, you know, see if we can identify issues and maybe in Bill's methodology or in some of his algorithm. That's all I'm trying to
say.
That's
fine.
And I think that's, you know.
And you can do that. In fact, I will invite you to, there's two individuals who've been calling me for the last month, and we try to set up a tentative conversation on Thursday afternoon at 2, and that's Carol Wetzel and John Rosen. And they're still arguing to try to go with a straight ad valorem method and looking at ways of saying, well, keep part, you know, the commercial businesses separately, and I've been having conversations with them. I'm not sure they're going anywhere. But if you're available Thursday at 2, it would be a telephone conference, or I'll reschedule it. But I would certainly, I don't know if I can do it unless it's during the time period of a briefing.
If you're going to do something like that with more than one of you, it needs to be at the 1 o'clock briefing.
Yeah, so I'm saying it might have to be a briefing meeting where you're in the office recording it, and we can be, or at least I would be away, because I'm not going to be here Thursday afternoon.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
Can we do that? Can we use the, you know, freeze the commercial percentage of the apportionment and then redistribute the residential side on an ad valorem basis?
Can we do it? I mean, if you read there's all kinds of methodologies that are available to us. Now, whether we can do it without somebody contending it is another story. Just like any of these ones for the residential, we can do them within, I mean, frankly, I think getting a private property appraisal on raw property is also within the enabling legislation. We're empowered, if you read Nancy's letter at the end relative to the subject of sea level rise, she talks about the broad powers of the district to do lots of different things. That doesn't mean that we can do them and not run the risk of getting a lawsuit, but, you know, we always run that risk anyway. So the truth is that, you know, there's many things we can do. We can ask for Bill's fee. Bill has already suggested to us that they thought it was within the purview of the district. We had that conversation a week or two before I left town, and he said, yes, you could treat the commercial. And he found in the process of doing that that he might have been looking at the commercial improperly, because not all commercial property is domiciles, okay? Some of it are restaurants and other things, but yet he was using as if they were all domiciles, so he missed about one-third of the commercial properties on some of the, I don't know whether it was storm damage protection or what it was, but on some of it, he missed it. And he proposed to us that he could pick up, it sounded like close to 50% of the commercial assessments or commercial apportionments based on the fact of using the entire base. Now, I don't have that. He was supposed to be documenting, so we didn't lose for posterity that conversation and the issues that were outstanding. Has he gotten back to us on where that document is? Okay.
During the briefing meeting?
What's that? During the briefing meeting, we approved him to spend up to a certain amount of money to document the issues that are outstanding right now vis-a-vis Sunset Captiva, the Gulfway, and how we could segregate commercial from residential. And we talked about ways, and he said he and his partner Gary had come up with some ideas, and he explained what he could do. He did also explain that the Sunset Captiva, did you document that meeting at all, Carolyn, or put out minutes? Sorry, is it in the minutes?
I believe that was even before the last board meeting.
Okay, I'm just saying, it would be nice then to refer back to the minutes and see how well it's covered, but we have a recording of it, and we have what he said, and he's supposed to be documenting it for posterity. And we authorized him to spend, what was it, $2,000, I think, to do the work on it.
Thank you for remembering that. That's the, and I think, and Mr. Lanigan, I think, thank you for bringing up the fact that, you know, there's all these random issues, but I think I would like to suggest before you engage with these folks, you have a pretty grip, a good grip on what's coming at us. And I'm thinking you should talk with, we should have a discussion with Nancy Stroud and Dr. Strong to know where we're standing, you know, rather than another open discussion. If you find it helpful.
Yeah, right here. I'm not interested in talking to anybody in the public right now.
Okay.
I really wanted to go into the office and kind of get my hands dirty and sort of make sure I, you know, I got a better idea. I could be more of a resource. But in order
to move the project forward, at some point we have to drive a stake in the ground, and the board has to approve the tentative apportionment to the best of its ability based on what we've been hearing from the public. At that point, we give everybody notice and we have a public hearing, and we might hear some more arguments in that public hearing as to what are issues, okay? Because we segregated bifurcated the referendum from the tentative apportionment this time, we've allowed more time on the tentative apportionment, but at some point you drive a stake in the sand and you say, this is what we think is the best we can do now. That is not the final end-all of the whole thing. That, and there may be specific cases, but at some point we kind of have to say, this is it, we're here, we're going forward with the project, and this is what people should assume, and they should raise their issues in the public hearing, and then they're not going to get them resolved until the final hearing, which is going to be, you know, a good 2 years later, maybe longer. So anyway, I'm just simply saying that, you know, we can listen to some things, we get facts. I had asked Carolyn to document every one of these that come in and whether we've responded to them and what we've told them. And so we have a control sheet that has a big list of these things. I think you should share that with the board so that the board can look at those and see what they are. And I have no problem with any of the board members going up talking to Carolyn and Joe about it. I just think that at some point in the fall, we'll have a lot more perspective on it, like we'll have perspective on using private property appraisers on these two particular properties, which are the most difficult. But there are bigger issues. There are people who are saying, I want a straight ad valorem, and they haven't given up.
Well,
just a point of view.
No, we're going to have to drive a stake in the ground, but I like the idea of being as prepared or do as much work as possible with these issues before we drive the stake. And if you're willing to do it on a briefing meeting time, I'd like to join you so I can get my head better wrapped around it too, to help.
The only risk then is that members of the community can join us then, which is fine, but I mean, you know, I'm really not concerned about that. But if one of us is there, then that's it. But if two of us are there,
then I'll go.
No, I'm good with it. So I'm fine with it. I'm not trying to hide anything. It's just that you got other people in. This guy's, you know, everybody just say, you know, we're trying to do work, and they're saying ad valorem, ad valorem. We're just trying to. You know.
Your point well taken.
I'd like to have you there, or Mike, when you're visiting. Yeah, I was just
trying.
Can we move forward now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have a lot on our plate here today. Item E, Captiva Island Historical Society, action requested as a motion to... Are you going to make a motion, Dave, on this?
Yes. I'd like to make a motion that the CPD supports a $10,000 sponsorship of the film titled Sands of Time, The Past and Future of Erosion on Captiva, that the Captiva Island Historical Society is producing.
May I?
Is there a second?
Your second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Discussion?
Ma'am?
Did you get an answer from Nancy?
I talked to Nancy, and she drafted this letter for us. It is on page 45, looks like. And basically it says, you know, that we will financially support it. It's our understanding that in exchange for our financial support of $10,000, the CIHS will own the copyright to the video, but will make it available without cost to the CEPD for educational purposes. And she has read over this. She has approved it. I did give this to Dave, who took it to the chairman of the CIHS, who approved it.
Does that mean if we wanted to put it on the website, we could
yes.
put it on the website?
Yes.
Okay, so then that's basically pretty wide open usage, right?
Right.
Yes, it lists other uses.
Okay, we have a motion on the table. Is there further discussion?
I have more discussion.
Go ahead.
Do we have editing rights? There are a number of people on the CIHS have been particularly negative, caustic, and really disrespectful toward the CEPD. Certainly in my tenure on the CEPD, which is less than a year. So I'm concerned with you know, the message they may deliver with respect to the CEPD.
I hadn't heard those comments. I'm on the board of...
Carolyn, Joe, did you want to add?
I'm really concerned about having editing rights to the film or having to use the entire film in our presentation.
Well, it does say all parts of it. We expect the video will be very useful and informative to the public as we enter into our next renourishment project and intend to use the vehicle or, I'm sorry, the video or parts of it on our website and in public forums among other educational uses.
This would be edited. I would consider that.
Right. But we could edit, David's saying, the fact that we can use parts of it, that's not editing. Like, let's say they make this this video and there's this thing about, what a bunch of... you know, hacks we are with this ridiculous apportionment process. But something that started as a very, you know, positive thing for the community has become negative because the CEPD, are unprofessional and they have this bizarre Ouija board type of apportionment process as opposed to ad valorem. I don't want to see that and I don't want to pay for that.
So that's what
concerns me about this.
Yeah,
So let's either withdraw the motion, Mike.
I mean, I want to make sure that,
I don't know how to say it.
Gentlemen, let's withdraw the motion and go back. Let's withdraw the motion and revisit it after these details are worked out, okay?
I'm sorry?
We either vote the motion down or we withdraw it
until
these details are worked out. I think Commissioner Lanigan has a good point, and we need to get that resolved.
I'm all for funding it and being a partner with them. I just want to make sure that they're positive partners with us.
Let's shoot it down until next meeting, and I'll bring all those concerns forward.
All right, let's just call the vote then. Okay, call the vote.
Are you going to withdraw that?
Or are you going to withdraw it? Which do you want to do?
I'll withdraw.
Okay, then. So motion withdrawn. Motion withdrawn. Okay. I think it's a good point. You clearly, I hadn't perceived that problem that you're referring to.
I don't expect it, but I totally agree. I never thought of that because I couldn't imagine it.
Right.
No problem.
Okay, the next item has parking lot title searches. You've been working on that, right? Have we gotten results on the title searches?
We have gotten results on the title searches. They are included. They are pages 46 through 51, I think. Those are farther than that. 60, sorry.
The total searches are 40 pages in length. One search is 450 pages. So we put those full documents on your next slide.
What did this cost, by the way, for all of these?
$1,100 for four
searches. To put this in context, because not everybody will remember what it's about, but we're looking at doing some work in the lot. We got funding from the TDC to put in a portable restroom, is that what we call it? They made some requirements to put some concrete pads down for handicap parking. I think Joe made a presentation in a prior meeting, talked about that other ideas have come up about maybe having a gate entrance and whatever. But at this point, I think we realized that, one, we wanted to know who owns the lot because we're going to have to eventually address that. We further wanted to say we have to get permits, which we didn't think of initially, but we have to get permits to do the work that needs to be done in there. I did ask that we include the neighbors in knowing what it is we're doing so that we don't have any surprises. The neighbors would include South Seas, where the housing is on one side. I think there's a condo association there. I don't know, Beach Homes or whatever it's called. I forget. And then there's also Susan Henry, whom I haven't met, but she purchased Jim Boyle's properties on one side. I did call her to tell her we were working on some things and that if she's coming down, to please let me know and we go over them with her, etc. So the idea is not to surprise the neighbors and the public with what we're doing. In addition to that, though, a question has been raised, and it's been raised 10 years ago, and it's been raised again more recently, about whether or not we would be willing to swap this with the Shirley lot. That is not a formal request. It's not something that we've ever formally considered. So we just have to know that it may be out there as a possibility. Bob Walter had asked Joe to stop all work on this because that's a possibility. He doesn't want to see us invest a bunch of money. I asked Joe to go forward anyway with what had already been approved by the board at a presentation, which was, I think you're going forward about the permitting and the design for the electricity and the water and laying the concrete pads and so on. So at some point you may have a schematic of this, so that may be one of the things you're going to get. I think that's important to present to the board and to the public so they understand what's being done there. I would also suggest that we reach out to those neighbors to let them know what we're planning to do. Not that anyone would have a veto authority, but I think that we shouldn't, you know, surprise people. In the course of the discussion with Susan Henry, just to make sure, and she seemed to be quite fine with it. She had some additional things she wanted. She loved the idea of the gate on the front end, but she wanted us to put in an electric eye that would tell people down at Blind Pass that the lot was full. We didn't think that was practical. But nevertheless, she had some issues because there's a big lineup. If you've ever tried to go up there in season, there's a big lineup outside her house. She owns what used to be Jim Boyle's house, if anybody knows where that is. So, now, I did also share the fact that there was a potential for swapping with the Shirley lot, and she immediately reacted in a negative way towards that because she thought that would make circumstances worse for her relative to the line backing up even further, and she won't be able to get out of her. So Bob Walter said he had an approach to that, which would get her a private driveway. My feeling is that we need to get a serious proposal from South Seas as to what they want to do. We can present it to our attorney. We have some facts, not a lot of money spent on the title search, but we have some facts relative to how this might be done. At some point, if we are going to go forward, I do think we want appraisals of both the Shirley lot and this, whatever rights we have on this lot, just so that we know what trade-off is being made. So we did a lot of work on this 10 years ago before Bob got here, and then South Seas just decided not to go forward and dropped it. So I think we have to be limited in what we're doing, because we could be wasting a lot of time until there's a formal proposal and we understand what the circumstances are, and we've gone over it with our attorney and so on and so forth. So we've done limited work at this point just to get a sense of who we're going to have to contact as you know, owners in the future. My feeling is that, you know, it was a worthwhile small expenditure just to know, so we, because some of these are going to be hard to find. Some of them have disappeared. Any further points you wanted to add on that, Joe?
Well, after you review it, you might want to do some more title searches. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I need some guidance on that.
So you're saying that the survey that you had gotten, a survey of the lot, correct?
Which is South Seas, which has two parcels, and then Ms. Henry, who has two parcels on that. Two parcels that are right across from the entrance. I did not go all the way to the shorty lot or the parcel next to it.
Okay, but what about the person who donated this to be perpetually either parking or a turnabout? Did we find out who?
Reading, it's the Lee County that gave it over to us.
Okay. I think they gave us the use of it and some money to start it up initially, but I think it was a private property owner that donated its use. But maybe not. But if it's Lee County, that's great. Let's get them to say that in writing so we know. I thought we had some mysterious...
It's a perpetual easement.
Okay. I may be wrong, but I'm of the impression that there was a private property owner who originally donated the land to be either a cul-de-sac or parking. If it was Lee County, then that's going to be much easier to deal with.
I'm no expert in title searches, but I read as much as I could.
Okay, that's great. No, that's great. Commissioners, any questions on this subject?
No.
Any guidance on how we're proceeding with it? Anything you want to do differently?
No. Maybe, most of what you just said went over my head. I don't know all the lots, so maybe at some point we get an overall description of the lots, of which one's Shirley's, which one is Jim Boyle's old house, and I don't know. So
can you,
about,
you know, in the fall?
It's all pictured, and every title search, we have it all laid out.
Okay.
It's just a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe in the fall, you can show us a schematic of it, you know, maybe in October or something like that, and give us a good idea of what it might look like, and have... I'm assuming you've got somebody who can do some drawings of the work we're going to do with it, not of the Shirley lot, but the work we're going to do with this lot. It would be clear. I would like everybody to be very clear on what it's going to look like, so they're not surprised when it's finished.
Could we potentially use this, you know, in response to what Ms. Kaiser said about, you know, telling the Army Corps what we're doing to increase parking or increase access? Would this help at all?
I think this what we're doing in this lot, the Hagerup lot, wouldn't do much. Getting the Shirley lot would do something. What actually could help a lot is if Joe had the idea to negotiate with South Seas for a certain number of spots within the Shirley lot that we could, you know, lease from them on a temporary basis. We once talked to Bob's predecessor, about that whole Starbucks area, basically putting that on the same meter and putting parts of the area outside of, you know, it's complicated, but and so on through the island, negotiate with, you know, Tween Waters. The yacht club is really slow in the summertime, and so following with the original idea that Steve Keene had, which this, you know, nightclub that basically made, and other places that have made arrangements for extra parking, it shows that we've made some movement and we've done some things. Now whether that is sufficient or not, I don't know, but I think it would be a good idea. But I think we need to go out and start to get a draft agreement, you know, from Nancy, and maybe start to negotiate with some of these people, starting with South Seas since they're closer. It would actually be better to get something that's more than a quarter of a mile south of the Hagerup lot. So I don't know where, for example, there's the Civic Association down there. I don't know what other areas there are. I did mention that I'd heard rumor, pretty good rumor, that Mucky Duck and the Green Flash are being sold, and that the buyer of, again, this is just rumor, but pretty good authority, that the buyer is buying a house next to the Mucky Duck to turn into parking. Now, I don't think that's necessarily so easy to do, and I'm sure the neighbors are going to have something to say about it, overlooking it. But nevertheless, if we made arrangements at times of the year with people like that, with Tween Waters, with various organizations that have space that might have lull seasons or whatever it may be, and it expands the potential of parking. Or we could similarly do something. I mean, we had opportunities once before to buy a piece of property and looked into it, and we felt it would, you know, create a lot of issues with the neighbors. But the county actually wanted to put a parking lot opposite Leica Lane back in the 80s, and the neighbors, you know, went crazy over it. They didn't want a parking lot there. So they made an arrangement that Leica and Whiteman would be open to the public, not for parking, but for at least purposes of walking down those lanes to get to the beach. So there's perpetual easements, I believe, and every now and then they would put a sign up saying no, you know, no public access, but the truth is they're not supposed to have those signs. The homeowners did. I don't know if they still do it. But Allison used to always go out there and take them down before the Army Corps of Engineers came here to do their survey. I haven't followed up on whether that still happens.
Those signs were what the guy saw when he came to visit the time.
Maybe.
Might be a better way to
well, we should communicate to those homeowner associations and say you can't put a sign like that up. It hurts us.
So you're saying this fellow was prohibited or from going down those roads because of that sign, those signs that they have?
Well, what happens is that when DEP or the Corps come down to visit, if they see negative signs against the public, they always write it down and it becomes a minus mark against you. If they could put the sign in a more positive light, like, please, pedestrians, you can go to the beach this way, and maybe in small letters, you know, there's no parking for cars down here. You know, there's other ways to say things without flagging down the inspectors from DPP and the federal feds.
We need to drive around and look for things like that, and then when we see it, we know specifically in that area. By the way, the Parks Department owned a piece of property on, I think, Leica Lane next to what was Daryl Potthoff's. I brought this up one time and was told that it had changed hands, but I think that maybe there was a quit deed or something was done. But I think if you could park 5 or 7 cars opposite the Sunset Cafe next to what was Daryl Potthoff's home on Leica Lane, that's at least it's a few more spots, and each one of those counts for something. And like she said, show that we're doing something would be beneficial. So I think we need to lay out a program on how we're going to do this. Okay, the parking lot survey update is simply that you got the survey done.
It starts tomorrow.
Okay. I want to put off the advocacy letters discussion for the moment, come back to that later. New business. Motion to approve hiring Aptum for a lump sum of $12,700 for local government funding request. What this action accomplishes, it hires Aptum to provide service in support of CEPD for submittal of its LGFR for fiscal year 2020-21 to include program planning, document review, cost estimates, preparing and submitting the application for the funding request, and submittal of documentation in support of an LGFR agreement due July 31, 2019. So it sounds like it's coming upon us quickly. Does anybody want to make such a motion?
I do. I'd like to make a motion.
Okay, I'll second it. Let's discuss it. Any questions? Aptum are here.
I'm new. Why do we do everything with Aptum? Who else does this business? I mean, if we wanted to get a competitive bid, with all due respect, since we don't know each other, it's easier for me. Who else have we ever considered doing business with anybody other than Aptum? Having a historical relationship is huge. I thought, you know, you guys, today's example was beautiful. Some of the, you know, the history that you can provide, at, you know, off the cuff is very valuable. So I'm not saying, you know, anything to other than, do we ever talk to anybody else?
I guess I am. There is state law that kind of defines for you use of consultants and who's qualified and how often they have to be qualified. And I forget, was it 5 years ago or so, maybe even longer, I requested that we go out and we get competitive bids, and we did. And not on individual things like this, but on the broader project support work, okay? And we requested several bids. I don't think we got a lot, but we did do RFIs to see who was qualified, et cetera. Similarly, on The Economist, for example, I made the same request. And we did go out and we got a bid. One other company, responded to that. There's been some other issues. The administration, for example, was bid once in the past. There was, I believe, in the standard operating procedures, it may still be there, but something that was lifted right out of one of the other counties that kind of defined, you know, an approach to doing this periodically, and it is strict state law on how you do it. Now, quite often, qualified consultants that are not as available in the general public tend to get used for a much longer period of time, and they recognize that in this state law. But at the same time, there are opportunities to do things like that. And if you could try to find either the standard operating procedure or the emails on it, I'll try to do the same. But I know that this has been brought up from time to time. When I first came on board, Cheryl Sims was on as a commissioner. She questioned that every time about, you know, these guys are damned expensive and why aren't we? This is exactly, you know, what she was saying. So the question gets raised. It should be defensible, and it should be that we've gone through a process. Steve, were you here when we went out and got?
I think you actually selected another contractor at one time, but I don't think it went beyond that point. So you selected more than one contractor in one of the go-rounds 8 or 10 years ago. And there's also an advantage in this particular type of industry in that a lot of things we do are linked together. So when we're doing annual monitoring, that goes right into permitting and construction of the project. And sometimes if you get too many people involved, you don't get a good flow of information between all the consultants. So
there is a coastal, is it Coastal Engineering that's in the East Coast, Naples area or something like that? But I know there's a similar name to your old name. Who is it?
Coastal Engineering Consultants.
Yeah. And then there's also Humiston and Moore, who's done some work that Sanibel has used, you know, quite often in the past.
And on
the
North Blind, Captive Island.
What's that?
And North Captive.
And North Captive Island used them a lot. And I believe on the Blind Pass Inlet Management Survey, that was a competitive bid. The county actually let the bid. I know Sanibel participated, Captiva participated, and they chose Aptum for it. So there have been competitive situations. But I clearly would look at what's in the standard operating procedures. I would look at what's in the state law. And I just went online once and I surveyed, you know, qualifications and rules for it, and I came up with, you know, some other county, I forget which county it was, that had some very detailed explanations for it. I worked with Damon at one point on the process of competitive bidding, and he said the county has a set of standards that they follow, and he was actually starting to look into that. I don't know that we ever produced anything, but he said that he thought there was very clear instructions there on what you go about asking for bids, etc. When I first came on board, we were using somebody for tilling the beach. We had no proposal, no contract. All we had was checks that changed hands. There was a few things like that. And we had changed it at one point in time, but according to Damon, that had lapsed back to the old method where somebody was chosen. And again, the size of the project and how, you know, whatever the public, I guess you have to be able to offer opportunities for minority bidders, and, you know, there's a variety of things that are detailed in the Lee County policy. Do you have a policy on that at Sanibel, James?
Yeah, I mean, we have policies, yeah.
So, let, you know, we can ask Santa
about. We want to bid, and we, right now we're using them under an existing contract.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Can I just say, I totally understand, and I'll do whatever I'm guided to do. I would like to note two things. One, I went back in our records, and the last time they did an LGFR for us, and I believe it was it last year? It was $12,500. We're looking at a $200 increase in a year, so I don't think that's bad. Additionally, if you look at their rate schedules, they're giving us their rates that they used in 2015. So while I'm certainly all for, you know, seeing what's out there, I'm comfortable at least, and especially in this particular case, since we're looking at such a time crunch, that we go ahead with Apton and have them.
Yeah, can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
I did not take Commissioner Lanigan's question as specific to this $12,700 bid. He was asking a more general question, and that's what I was at. And that's where I think we ought to look at the facts relative to on an ongoing basis so that everybody's aware of the process. Mm-hmm. Relative to this specific item, we had a motion. Did you not make a motion, Commissioner Jensen, on that? And I seconded it. Mm-hmm. And we were discussing it, and your question came up in the discussion, which was more general. But to this specific point, I would suggest we call the vote. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Relative to the more general question, I think Commissioner Lanigan is correct that we ought to be apprised of what the process is and how that we go about doing that.
So. And just finally, the fact that this project is, top line is $30 million, the last project was, what, $18
million? $20
million,
brother.
$20 million. That's going to raise, people are going to say, well, you know, did we put it out for competitive bid? How come it's 50% higher, similar template, that sort of thing? I just want to be able to say, you know what, we did. And we're not going to get better, you know, than what we have. You know, that's we're going to have to answer that question.
We are. I think that the first cut that we heard was like $36 million, and then
that's
some
bigger project.
Some pencil sharpening occurred and other things. I think similarly, until we've gone out and we see what sources of outside revenue we're going to have and so on, we're going to be constrained by not being able to spend, you know, more than $18 million on Captiva, and I don't think we want to, I personally don't want to see us spend anywhere near that. So there's some things that have to be done on the funding side that would help a great deal. Year 5, post-construction physical monitoring, this is based on the last project. You want to explain that, Carolyn?
Sure, it was written into the previous contract. You have to have a year 1, year 2, year 3, and a year 5 post-construction physical monitoring engineering. This is the scope of work. It was actually handed out. It didn't make it into your packet. So it was a distributed in any event, yes, here we go. Scope of work for manual physical monitoring. And Apton has come in at a rate of, I think it was 53,000. This is already approved from back in the 2013-14 funds. I was looking through there just to make sure, and we have the approval from the DPP for them.
And you're saying the funds are in the capital budget already?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so is there a motion to approve the year 5 post-construction physical monitoring?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, there is a resolution, and it's 2019-06. Do you know what page?
78.
Okay. Resolution number 2019-06 by the Board of Commissioners of Captiva Erosion Prevention District, Lee County, Florida, whereas Captiva Erosion Prevention District is authorized by Chapter 81-413, Laws of Florida, Section 161.32, Florida Statutes 2012 as a beach and shore preservation district, and whereas Section 4, Powers of the District, Paragraph 4, authorized the district to adopt rules of its own government and proceedings, and whereas the district has adopted rules of procedure last amended January 7, 2019, and whereas Rule 1.23D of the District Rules of Procedure provides that a resolution stating budget and purposes shall be required to initiate any project exceeding $25,000, and whereas the district desires to initiate such a project exceeding $25,000, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Commissioners of the Captiva Erosion Prevention District that Section 1, the district approves the expenditure of $53,470 for the project described as Year 5 post-construction physical monitoring and engineering report services. The project purposes are for permit required physical monitoring of the 2013 beach nourishment project. Section 2, this resolution shall become effective immediately upon adoption. Discussion?
What did we pay last time for, and when was that?
I do not know. It was 2 years ago. Do you have
a number? Yeah, I think it was about 76,000.
And so this 5-year monitoring is 3. The reason for the difference is we talked to DEP about the permit requirement for what actually had to be surveyed for this year. And so usually it's the whole Captiva and Sanibel portions. And since there's basically other monitoring going on for Klein Pass maintenance projects, that there's a place to downdrift, so that there's been placement on that beach since the 2013, you know, big project, and they're doing monitoring as well. So, you know, we basically said, hey, do we need to do monitoring on top of monitoring? And they said, no, they would waive that requirement to do monitoring for Sandville. So this year, they're only going to enforce the monitoring for Captiva.
Further questions?
And this funding source has already been identified, is that right?
Yes.
It's in the capital budget, you said, right? Call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? It's passed unanimously. Included is the Blind Pass Inlet Management Plan for information purposes only. No discussion or vote required unless there's a question. Does anybody have a question they'd like to raise? All the appropriate people are here now, so.
May I ask you a question?
Sure.
Is this relative, and I talked to Joel about this last time, this is a project where you guys are going to open up an area from, it's kind of been closed off from between Sanibel and Captiva. Is this what this is referring to?
Yeah, so obviously we did the Blind Pass Inlet Management Study, right, which is now turned into the Inlet Management Plan. Part of the alternative that was selected includes dredging into Sunset Bay, which would increase the flushing into Blind Pass, and that was part of the alternative. There's a number of other components to that, including stopping short of cutting through, you know, the current dredge template, also potentially putting a spur on the groin itself, and then there's some nourishment that would occur on northern Sanibel as well. So there's a number of different components that make up that plan.
James, I don't remember, but Albright Island is in Blind Pass, and it's now become Peninsula because it connects. Is that going to be opened up?
That's the one in the Sunset Bay where they would be...
that would allow the flushing.
And Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it would be just on the, you know, just north of the bridge there, between, you know, that's Albright Island, right?
Yeah. Sort of Castaways Marina.
Right to Sunset Bay, correct. Yeah. That used to be a pretty deep channel in there, actually.
That's right. It was probably a couple of hundred feet wide. How wide are we making it now under the new plan?
I'd have to look at that plan, but there were two scenarios, or there were two alternatives that were ran. One was a deep channel, it was much, right, you know, and when it adjusted, it was pretty wide. But we went, I think the alternative we decided on was a smaller channel, so that it would be so deep, and it changed the way the pass meandered. Ultimately, I think it had, you know, some positive benefits. Reducing the erosion.
And what is the goal of this, ultimately, this plan? What is it going to accomplish? This work, this project?
Yeah, Michelle was one of the key engineers on this, but I mean, the ultimate goal is to, one, provide the flushing channel and connection from Blind Pass, or from the Gulf of Mexico, to into Pine Island Sound,
okay,
which benefits water quality for both Sanibel and Captiva. Of course, to maintain the pass in an open state not for navigation, but for, you know, for access for tourism, so that both Turner Beach and Blind Pass can enjoy the benefits of access and tourism. But primarily, the water quality was a big, big issue for both Roosevelt Channel and for Blind Pass itself. Also.
Okay. And then, have you done part of this work, I imagine, is determine if there's any excess risk or added risk specifically to the Captiva side of Blind Pass as far as excess water coming onto shore there. It's a pretty vulnerable area. Will this increase volume and increase the risk of water coming onto those lands?
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert. I mean, I'm not a coastal engineer, sure. But, you know, the net transport is, you know, south-north. So, I mean, what do you mean excess water coming on? I mean, if
the current be greater?
One, we wouldn't have an erosion problem on Sanibel. So, I mean, there's trade-offs for all of the different alternatives. The other option is not to maintain the passive open state at all. Which, of course, then we don't have an erosion problem in northern Sanibel. But I think, you know, I'll let Michelle speak to that. She's the engineer.
I'll chime in. So the recommendations that came out of the study, we looked at a ton of different alternatives, and some of them, the whole idea was to see if there's impacts to the adjacent system. So that included the south end of Captio Island, northern Sanibel, the interior waterway there, the shoal of the inlet that builds up, and what happens to the whole system. And so, as you can imagine, the different alternatives had different impacts in different places, and we try to optimize that while still maintaining the passive and open condition and minimizing erosion and all those kinds of things. Of the recommendations that came out of the study, there was, I mean, most of them have very little impact on the south end of Captio because of the transport that James mentions. The impact, because of the inlet, is mostly on the south side, on Sanibel Island, and then there's the structure that stabilizes the south end of Captio Island. So in terms of erosional risks on Captio, or risks to Captio with the plan,
if I may, I think you should get a copy of the report, and maybe we can even arrange another meeting at some point to tell the community. But there were several public discussions, pretty involved, and Michelle has done some presentations, and there's a lot to it.
Yes.
And it's tough to cover it in a
okay.
15 minutes, but there's a lot to it. And it was, once upon a time, it was an interlocal agreement between Captio, Lee County, and Sanibel, and I think Captio, CAPD, and Lee County paid sort of a 50-50 on it. Subsequently, Lee County took the responsibility for the broader project and looked in the interests of Sanibel and Captio and tried to address everybody's needs in this study that was done. And there are a lot of people from Sanibel who were concerned about how they were silting in Dinkins Bayou and in Sunset Bay and large areas there that were concerned. There was concern about how much of the sand was coming off the beach and going in to close the pass. So they came up with an approach that was trying to satisfy all the stakeholders and do something that made sense and kept flow of water going through and so on. Now, historically, there were times where there was a lot of erosion along the shoreline. My property was one of them, and a revetment was put in to provide some level of protection to stop the erosion, and Hans had done the work on the revetment. So it's involved. I think we should share that information with you, and I think you should be prepared to ask the questions of Aptum and others, but it's a pretty big deal that's been worked on for, what, 3-4 years now at least.
Yeah, I think the county put great information online. There's a history.
It's all on there.
Yeah, it's all explained quite well.
But in that, it explains that there's no extra pressure going to be put on the properties from the leeward side of Blind Pass up into Pine Island Sound. There's no reason for concern for those properties. I mean, similar to what you said about having to put a revetment.
I don't really remember. I mean, okay. Truthfully, I would say that, you know, the they can tell you what the current is expected to be, but I didn't hear that there was any concern about increased erosion.
So, if I may,
yep.
So
okay.
Remember, all this work is done through modeling, so you
right.
can never predict 100% whether or not there's going to be an impact on the property.
Right.
However, it does somewhat resemble what the pass looked like in the mid to late 90s when the pass cut through to Sunset Bay was there. The only addition, I think, and the dredge template is, you know, we didn't really dredge back then. But this one would stop short of cutting through the dredge template, which helps to bypass sand and keep sand moving south instead of going right into the pass. So it improves the operation management of the pass itself. So.
Okay, so I understand the goal of the project. This project probably delivers that. It sounds like it delivers that. I have no,
I'm just worried about, you know, sort of unintended consequences.
Absolutely.
And that, of course, I don't ask anybody to give anyone assurances or guarantees other than that the work was done professionally with everyone's best interest in mind. But there's a lot of this collateral damage on a lot of good projects. And I just want to, you know, since we're, since we're responsible for the entire shoreline of Captiva, if this is going to put some part of that that shoreline at risk, I'd like to know about it and discuss it. That's all. Yes, thanks, Hans. Yes.
I was just going to say, for your understanding, where the Turtle Beach groin extends out into the Gulf of Mexico, the rock starts there, comes all the way around the south end of Captiva, continues underneath the bridge, and continues all the way up into Wolfer Channel, basically Blind Pass. It's a significant size riprap structure that was built, and I think we did it in 94. And it covers, I think, as many as four or five, possibly even six lots, all the way up into Wolfer Channel, probably about halfway to the entrance to Roosevelt Channel. And so that whole north of Blind Pass shoreline is rock revetted. It's all covered up with mangroves now. You can't even tell that it's there. Uh-huh. But it's rock solid. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and in terms of the modeling study, there was nothing in that area that showed any adverse, anything that was different than the current situation when the pass is open.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'd like to move on. There's a lot to it, and I think you should definitely get some help from the office to understand how to get all that. Some of it is in this plan. DEP Hurricane Irma Assistance 19LE3. This is basically a motion to approve the Hurricane Irma Recovery Project from the DEP, which is basically to accept funding from them of $259,000. This is not for work to be done. This is for work that has been done, right? Or we can't, that we plan to do,
yes.
but it's recovery to the Hurricane Irma thing.
Correct. It has been approved by NHTSA.
Right, and it accepts funding available for Hurricane Irma recovery, which has been approved already for the 2020-2021 beach nourishment project. So it's not a separate effort, and it's money we would be getting. Do I hear a motion to accept the $259,664 as proposed?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor? Sorry.
I just want to verify that number hasn't changed along. Okay. That's it.
Yeah. Is that the end of it, by the way, then, relative to the Hurricane Irma assistance?
That's the state part.
Okay. The FEMA is still up in the air. Okay. So, again, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Okay, SOP Commissioner Assistance. Action requested a motion to approve updated SOPs entitled Providing Administrative Assistance to Commissioners. Anybody want to make a motion on this?
Well, we can't discuss it unless the motion is
correct.
I'll make the motion to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, discussion.
I didn't have enough time, quite honestly, to prepare for this meeting to say whether I'm in favor or not of this proposal. So I don't think I'm ready to vote on it. Hans, you wrote this up. Do you care to talk to us a little bit about what motivated you to do this and why it's necessary to make these changes?
It's driven basically by feedback received from Carolyn and Joe and our ongoing efforts to update the SOPs. And then when I looked at this, it was written in a format that was more of having employees in the office versus contract consultants. And so it was like, well, this is a good opportunity to rewrite this, to bring it up to date. It's germane at the moment. It's a better reflection on our 1099 contract consultants that we currently have as administration. And I thought it would be a way for us to try to gauge with staff, or I call them staff, the administration, what hours that, you know, what's the estimate on the hours that we're putting into this, and is it taking away from their duties that that is the priorities of the board or the direction that the board's given to do things. So basically, we put it out there as an update for the SOPs. We have more coming along the way. So you're going to see these popping up in the board meetings as we go, a little bit at a time.
Yeah, but again, I don't have that much time to study it. I'm not that familiar with the 1099 contractors versus employees. I've only worked with employees my career, so I've got to think about that. I don't know what do you guys feel, but some of it seems very encumbering. It seems unnecessarily bureaucratic in my eyes, again, in my first blush. So that's, you know.
I would share another perspective, and that is that it contradicts the rules of procedure on the subject of priorities. The rules of procedure indicate that in the event there is a conflict of priorities, the chairman settles the conflict of priorities. So if there are multiple commissioner requests or whatever, this is basically establishing a procedure that would be resolved independent of the rules of procedure, which address the role of the chairman in establishing priorities. I also have a lot of experience with contractors. I'm going to say I had, you know, well over 1,000 contractors work for my business back in the day, and was pursued by the IRS on the subject of whether they were employees or contractors for a number of years, and had substantial money reserved in the balance sheet of my company, etc., for that. And in the end, it became a non-issue because I did a great deal of investigation and worked with lawyers that understood the rules. And I would say that there may be a concern. I think the concern, from my experience, is at least as much for Hans as it is for the district. And that should be, I would suggest that we seek legal guidance from an employment attorney on that subject, because that's what I've done in the past, is that there's been employment attorneys who understand it. I think Microsoft once lost a case where they had a subcontractor working for them directly that was treated as an employee, and then they was entitled to pension and other things. But I think the reason why there is an entity between the CEPD and the subcontractors is basically they would either be his employees or they would be his contractors, but they're not ours. But rather than go into all of this right now, I think that you're right, it's an involved situation. I'm particularly concerned about the impact on the prioritizations, but I think we should go and get an opinion of an employment attorney on the subcontractor issue that Hans has raised. I think what he is viewing as supervision is to me definition of requirements, which I think is the goal of the board, to establish policy and to establish requirements. But rather than argue all that right now, I think that we should seek separate, you know, legal opinion. So I'm inclined to vote no, and to go out and seek those opinions of an employment attorney, and also give more time to the board to understand what does seem like a very involved procedure. That's my opinion on it. So, Dave, do you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, I think since that legal issue has been brought up, yes, we do need an opinion. And I think, you know, it's in our best interest to operate things as smoothly as possible and do whatever we can. And I just don't know, as in what Michael's saying, I haven't really thought it through to know if this is a solution or not for the staff, from our perspective.
So, Mike, did you make the motion?
I did. I can withdraw it?
No, you can call the vote.
Okay. Let's vote. Dave?
So, again, we're voting to
accept. To accept, yes.
No.
Yeah, I'll vote no I'll vote no.
No, I vote no.
But we will reconsider this, or we're going to...
We'll do our research.
...action with the attorney to... So how do we go about doing that? Nancy, is that kind of our... We talk to her about this, or do we get a specific employment attorney?
I would probably ask Nancy for a referral.
Sure.
For employment, and then find out what the cost would be, depending on the cost.
I would also ask her to review the rules of procedure that talks about the prioritization of work as handled by the duties of the chairman as compared to this procedure.
It's two parts.
I'd like to move on because we're really running out of time. Parking meter warranties?
Mr. Chairman, if I could protest, Hans raised his hand. I thought this is an important issue.
I just want to clarify that in doing this, I did run this by Nancy and have to vet this, because I don't want to waste your time with something that I just come up with. So if at this point, because she said she gave her blessing, but if it's the board's opinion that we need to reach out to an employment attorney, I think that's fine. I'm happy to do that and find someone that can review this. And in fact, we can even try and present to them with the current. I don't know if that was done.
I really think this is not the time for the discussion. With all due respect, you put a lot of effort into it. I think we need to get an attorney, and I think we also need to have time to understand what's being proposed here. And in the past, I know you have reached out to Nancy on some items, and I consulted my own attorney on some items as to how votes were taken, and you know she was wrong in some cases, at least according to, you know, what you said you discussed with her. So, you know, we need an opinion. We'll get an opinion, and I think the board can certainly get a recommendation from Nancy or find an employment attorney to address that subcontractor aspect. Nancy should specifically address, and I'll be happy to point out to her where I think it's in conflict with the rules of procedure. She may have missed that, but it's a definite conflict in my opinion. So, anyway, parking meter warranties. Motion to approve warranties on parking meters in the past amount of $6,373. We didn't get warranties when we purchased the meters. Is that the issue? And in order to put them under warranty currently, we have to pay back fees on the warranties. Is that correct?
It just expired. It just wasn't renewed last year.
Right. So we have them without warranties expired. Is that what they get, $6,000 a year for?
That is for 2 years.
2 years.
And two machines.
So it's $3,000 a year per machine?
No, $1,500.
It'd be $1,500.
Oh, thank you. And that's for a $10,000 machine?
Right.
So it's a 6-year break even, more or less? What's the expected life of these things? I mean, is it worth buying that, you know?
I feel it's worth it. The salt is eating it up.
What is the ongoing cost going forward? Because obviously, if we're going to back up the warranties for the past, we're going to want to know what the warranty cost would be in the future.
$1,500 machine per year.
Okay.
And what if,
seems pricey,
when there's a warranty claim, do we have a history of warranty claims and what it would have cost?
Every piece in there is $1,000 at least. So,
do we know how much?
Okay. Do we hear a motion though on the? Sorry. Do we hear a motion on the parking meter warranties?
I'll make a motion to pay the outstanding balance and continue the arrangement into the future.
I'll start from there.
Okay, any further discussion?
No, I other than this comment, obviously do.
Commissioner Lanigan, you made the motion. Do you want to call the vote or do you have further discussion?
Call the vote.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Funds to Florida Prime. This is execute resolution 2019-05, I'll read in a minute, to approve the moving of excess funds to Florida Prime. What the action accomplishes, it allows the district to receive a higher interest on our funds instead of the current rate at Bank of the Islands. 2019-05, do you know what page that is?
Yes, 143.
Captiva Erosion Prevention District Resolution Number 2019-05, Resolution Number 2019-05 by the Board of Commissioners, whereas the Captiva Erosion Prevention District is authorized by Chapter 2000-399, Laws of Florida and Section 161.32, Florida Statutes 2018 as a beach and shore preservation district. The rest of this is all redundant with what I'd read previously. Let me get down to the part that changes, if everybody's okay with that. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Commissioners of the Captiva Erosion Prevention District that Section 1, the District approves the use of the Bank of the Islands for its general local banking needs, but directs the administrator to use the Florida Local Government Surplus Funds Trust Fund as its primary investment account. Excess funds in the Bank of the Islands is authorized to be transferred to the District's account at the Florida Local Government Surplus Funds Trust Fund. Section 2, the district authorizes the administrator as necessary to cause to be updated any information with the Bank of the Islands and the Florida Local Government Surplus Funds Trust Fund. The district further directs that the chairman, the treasurer, and the administrator shall be signatories to the accounts. Section 3, this resolution shall become effective immediately upon adoption. Questions?
So we maintain our account, our main account at the Bank of the Island. We then give you authorization to send wire the money from the Bank of the Island to the Florida Local Government Trust Fund.
Yes.
Trust fund, yeah. And then what do they do with it?
The trust fund statewide, they manage $13 billion across the states.
Okay.
And I imagine they make very conservative investments from there. They don't really specify exactly who they're investing in.
Okay, but is this the same thing we were talking about dishing out to different banks, the FDIC insured?
Yes, I interviewed Bank of Tampa as well as PNC Bank. We already had two accounts before the fund. Their percentage came in much higher than the other two banks.
If I may, though, what Mike is referring to as the dishing out is that we said we could. There are banks that have a feature where they spread no more than $250,000 per bank, so that we stay within the FDIC insured portion, and they act as sort of a bundling group, and they distribute the money. This would all be with this Florida Prime, correct? Will they in turn offer FDIC insurance for all of the monies that they're holding? Are they going to dish it out to other banks, or are they keeping it themselves?
They made it clear they do not insure the money, but this fund's been around. It just seemed like it was...
All right, if I may add something else. In 2008, we had a financial crisis. There was an organization in Florida, I forget what the name of it was, that played a very similar function, and we had to very quickly start moving money around, and in fact, we had some degree of risk. But this organization that worked for local governments, and I don't remember the name of it offhand, throughout Florida, this organization turned out to ultimately be not solvent. And I don't remember whether we lost specific money or we came close to it, but I remember there was a definite panic on the island that our money was tied up with this one bank or this one institution. They didn't handle our operating funds locally. Dave, I don't know if you remember that circumstance,
yeah.
And I don't know what they were called, and I'm assuming it's a different organization, but this place has probably only been around since, 2009 or later. The other one, I think, ultimately went under, and I do think that we ought to do a little bit more research. I like the idea that we talked about before, Joe, where you said we could find a bank that actually, and I don't know enough about how secure that is either, but a bank that would move the money around and put $250,000. I don't even know if that's legal. I mean, they probably legally can do it, but I don't know if
sure.
It's protected. So you have FDIC.
There actually is, yeah.
So they actually create 20 accounts or whatever they need to do.
There's lots of places that have all these, community
So they have, software or something that takes care of it.
I've researched the last 20 years of where we put our money, and they've never done that before.
Done which before? What he's approaching? No, I know we haven't done it. The issue is, in the last 20 years of what we put our money, did you find out where we had it in 2008? Who did we have it with?
SunTrust, Wells Fargo.
Keep going. The bulk of the monies I know where we were getting the maximum interest is in this Florida organization, whatever it was.
Can't find that anywhere.
It was a small amount of money.
I have no idea.
Yeah, if my memory serves.
The point I'm making is that local governments throughout the state, we may have used it less than others, maybe we weren't keeping large balances, but local governments throughout the state held their money in, in something that, and it was an independent entity, but it acted on behalf of all these local governments, and it ran into trouble.
It was a state sponsored,
yes. And I don't remember what it was called.
So again, our whole effort here is to try to get more protection and or interest?
Well, we currently have 0.03% and Florida Prime offers 2.67%.
And do we have protection on the money?
No. They keep 25% liquid, and we get our money within a day if we need to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as... And then... The other banks were only suggesting CDs or T-bills. And I didn't think you guys wanted to lock the money up that way.
If I could just add that I already commended Joe for his initiative in identifying that we have money sitting there basically getting no interest or most. And I commended him on identifying that there's better ways to do it. You, I think, might have mentioned, Mike, about this, that there are banks that, you know, spread this out.
I thought we both,
And I looked it up online as well. It seems to me having federal deposit insurance is a little bit better way to go about it. However, I'm just saying, I think that the initiative is good and it's a good approach. I would be concerned, only because of the past experience we had, I would talk to, do you know what Sanibel does by any chance? Maybe we should call up your treasurer.
I believe it's Florida Municipal Insurance Trust. We go through the Florida League of Cities, I believe it's.
Okay. Is this through the Florida League of Cities, Joe, or is this something independent?
That's an IT, I think. It's
sounds similar.
Yeah, I didn't have to look it all up.
Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind, though, that we absolutely had chosen a firm like that since long before I ever came into the district, okay? And for years it was fine, and then in 2008, in the big financial crisis, they were in money markets, essentially. And the money markets took a big dive in 2008. So I think you're on the right track. I think we just need to kick the tires a little bit more. The other thing I was going to say is, as far as a resolution goes, I would try to be, instead of saying, you know, this is authorizing us to use the Bank of the Islands as well, I don't know why we need to do that. I think that's something that, you know, you and the treasurer, it should basically say the primary, you know, whatever you want to call it, the primary operating account, that bank, and the authority to move funds from that into another fund, whatever it may be. So I'm just saying, I think it's too specific and it could be more general. Only because I don't want us to be, I have no issue with Bank of the Islands, I have an account with them, but I don't want to be married to them by resolution if you choose in the future to change and go somewhere else, right? For whatever reason. But anyway, so I guess the question is we've had a motion, we've had a second, some issues have been raised. Any further thoughts?
No, other than Joe, I'd like to talk to you about this during the week.
Do we want to withdraw the motion then?
Yeah, I'll withdraw the motion.
Okay.
You know, we actually didn't have, a motion or a second for that. We just went straight into the decision.
I think we did.
We have a motion and a second.
Oh, I apologize.
So
okay.
I'm going to withdraw that motion for now.
Okay. I personally think we could do something like this with a time limit and not, you know, take a huge risk if we're going to let it sit there for 2 months while we come up with a better alternative. But how much interest are we going to earn during that period of time? I mean, there's a lot of money sitting around earning no interest right now.
Yeah.
Renee Maville once offered to invest it in the stock market on IPOs. I think we rejected that approach. But anyway, so it's withdrawn. Second is withdrawn. A little more work, I think, complements to identifying the problem and trying to move it in the right direction. And speaking of which, Joe, I think that you also identified that we were paying multiple for certain insurances. Has that ever been settled? Have you clarified that?
We're at the end of getting the final say-so from the insurance agents.
Okay.
So I'm working with Hans on that.
We are members of the League of Cities, correct? Okay. In addition to that, you recently asked me about permission to attend some courses, which sounded like they were for, you know, municipalities and so on and so forth, and that sounded like a good idea. Are you scheduling to do that?
That is the it's through the FSAD, which is the Florida Association of Special Districts, and they actually are having a conference that started today, but we're going to attend tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday because we're lucky and it's here local in Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a course where they certify district managers. They only hold it once a year in March, so we just missed it.
Yeah.
But we definitely are interested in doing that in March.
Okay. I think it's a great idea that you've discovered this and come up with it. I'm surprised we didn't know about it earlier, but I think that's great. I think that you would benefit from being at that and reaching out and getting contacts from people there and finding out what other districts do. And you might come back with overwhelming support for this prime or something else, but I think it would be a good opportunity in any event to wait till after you've done that and see what information you get for our next month's meeting. Okay, the next point is sea level rise and advocacy letters. I'm going to touch advocacy first. A lot of the people who have been looking to help us solve the apportionment problem, so the people who are asking that we go to other methods and so on and so forth, I have been trying to direct them to indicate that the best thing they could do initially is to help us bring the overall cost down significantly, and that we need to be able to have the CPD do some advocacy and communicate to its constituents that they can help us in the process. Joe, I think you said that an SOP regarding funding sources for project, you weren't able to find that. I don't know if you've since found that. But I think that, what do we do? How do we go about it? You know, we have a legislative delegation. There's a variety of things. So if you can, for the next meeting, identify a variety of things that, I know that we've gone to Tallahassee in the past, you know, prior chair people have and so on, and then Kathy Rooker has gone with them. I know I've met with county commissioners and some local people. I know that we've sponsored or encouraged, I don't know if we've sponsored, but we've encouraged some fundraisers of people on the island for particular people who are running for office to have them, you know, beneficial to our way of thinking or whatever it may be. I don't know what we can do there legally or not as a district, but I think certain individual commissioners have been supportive. But I think that more so, and this is the message I'm trying to give to certain people, is more so than just us squabbling internally on the island over who's paying what, et cetera, far more can be accomplished. Doesn't mean that we don't have to settle these other issues, but far more can be accomplished by advocating people to help us help ourselves. We have people running for office who we think could be good friends to the district. Frankly, Mayor Ruane is running for county commissioner, and I think we'd be hard-pressed to find a better friend. He's been for years saying that he thinks we pay too much money and we should be going after the TDC and other things. So, I mean, you know, that could be a blessing for us. Councilman Maughan, Jason Maughan, is running for the House. What is it, an assemblyman or whatever it may be? He would have to be the person that introduces a bill at the state at some point in time. So I think these are people who could be very helpful and who we enjoy good relationships with. So, but beyond that, I think that I want to get a message out, and I wanted the opinion of the commissioners before I write a letter. I know you've done some work on it, Carolyn, as well. How do you feel about sort of rattling the cages of our constituents on the island to make them aware of the fact that writing to their congressmen vis-a-vis, you know, the federal side of it, writing to their state senators and assemblymen and county commissioners, that these are things, writing in whatever method of advocacy we can do. How do you feel about that? Do you think that would be beneficial, commissioners?
I think we need to do a little work on this. I think we got to know our numbers, where we stand.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, our constituents who have brought concerns about how we're doing the apportionment plan, I think we should reach out to them and consider, you know, we've never had an advocacy committee,
right,
or a committee of where, first of all, what you're asking is beautiful. Yes, we should, but maybe we should start a committee or something.
Sure.
And have these folks help with this.
I think it's a great idea.
And that way, rather than telling them what to do, let them help themselves.
Yeah.
And
I will say it's going to be like dragging a horse to water when he doesn't want to drink. No, only because there are some who will get it and have been interested, but a few of those that have particular ideas in mind, I've been bringing this up to them, and I'm saying, hey, you want to help? They say, how can I help you develop a better apportionment plan? Help us cut the size of it down significantly.
Well, could I go ahead and
that would be great.
Work on that?
That would be great, Dave. Thank you. Commissioner Lanigan, do you have any thoughts?
I like the subject.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay, great. And then on sea level rise, a couple of issues. The Captiva Community Panel some years ago did a symposium. Hans spoke at it, and a number of other people talking about the issues and the effects on septic systems and other things, but that sea levels are rising. Sanibel recently worked with FGCU on a fairly substantial effort to try to identify assets and so on, but people are waking up to the fact that there's a lot to do down the road to protect our islands and our assets from rising seas and storminess and other issues that we should be concerned with. The Captiva Community Panel didn't follow up at the time that they did the symposium, but they have followed up more recently and assigned a committee. And a couple of people, Linda Laird and Larry Barris, I think, are chairing it. They hired Kate Gooderham to come in and be sort of a moderator, and a bunch of people are involved, and I'm sitting on that, and they've asked me to bring the subject up to the CEPD. As I read the enabling legislation, and for years, frankly, I brought up we have a responsibility for the Bayside as well as the Gulf side. It's just not as easy to see what to do over there. I contacted Nancy Stroud, our attorney, and I said, I'm reading the enabling legislation that is within our purview. What we do, how we address it is another story, but is it within our purview? And she submitted this letter at the end, which, based upon her research of the legislation, pretty much spells it out. And it says to me, yes, it is within our purview, and it's something that we have to be able to address in the future. Having said that, I want to bring it up today for purposes of the budget, which we said we would go forward with, is to say, to do it, we don't have the resources, we're going to need outside help, and for starters, if we could have some money available for that, and we have. Come when we approve the budget, we'll see how much we have at that point, and we can look to see who some of the people are that can help us, and I would be certainly happy to ask Aptum how much. You guys must be doing a lot of work on this somewhere in the world, right?
Just to mention really quickly, we just did a study from Delray Beach.
Okay.
And we were concentrated on the back side.
Okay.
And what we were looking about there is giving everybody equal protection against an X return period storm. So it's like the, and we determine the storm by looking at the local tide gauges. And we're doing similar work for other communities that we work for. We considered, I think, sea level rising your last permit. We're kind of accelerating the beach elevation according to the moderate sea level rise scenario.
Right.
That's the one DEP is limiting us to that scenario.
Yeah.
We also have a group, I know the leader of it is out in San Diego. We just went to the FEMA conference in West Palm Beach and talked about some of the resiliency issues that went with that. And there's some very particular definitions in that regard. Lastly, I'm working with Cuyahoga County on their new feasibility report, and they're doing more than just the beaches. So the beaches is like the low-hanging fruit, so if nothing else works, they're going to try to do the beaches. The second thing
is that you as Aptum, or do you have some independent contact?
We're assisting the county in providing the Corps with all the information they need to do the analysis. Yeah. But the other thing that they're looking at is pretty interesting is the protecting the coastal area from flooding that comes with the big storms. And they came up with a unique way that works in a couple of Cuyahoga County's places where they're just isolating whole areas. Now that might not work for the island here, but there's a lot of ideas floating around in that vein out there.
Well, the committee of the panel so far has identified a lot of different areas and some things that related from the Sanibel effort with FGCU. I think Shang, I think, is a consultant that...
Peter Chang,
yeah, that they...
And we're looking at doing some additional modeling. I don't know if you're all aware, but the FGCU is coordinating an effort among all of the local governments in Southwest Florida, from Charlotte County down to Collier County. It's called the Southwest Florida Reflow Compact. And we hope to have that formed sometime in the late fall. So we're working on that effort now. That would potentially give us all opportunities to partner together for modeling across the whole region. But we're also looking at potentially in the short term doing some modeling in Sanibel, and which would include Captiva and possibly Fort Myers Beach. We're looking at that right now with Dr. Savarese. So I was going to get in touch with you to potentially look at how we could partner on that.
That's good. And I think one of the, one of the members of the committee, Bill Riley, who you may know, but Bill is a big environmentalist, has been in Captiva for a very long time. He's talked about his experiences with mangroves and living shorelines and so on and so forth. So we're going to be reaching out to find out, as much as we can. I think, John, you said that you had some experience with people working down in the Lover Key area, and you sent me something on that. So the point is there's a lot of work being done. Nancy Stroud, in writing this memo, also pointed out to me that there's a regional planning council. I don't know much about that. Do you know what that is here on the East Coast?
The regional planning council did a good bit of work, a while back. It was really driven by Jim Beaver. Because the regional planning councils really don't have much power anymore, since they got rid of DCA.
Okay.
We really focused more on this regional compact like they did in the Southeast region. We just think it'd be better, especially if you can operate me out of the university. That'll allow all the sports.
And the Savarese coordinating that?
Dr. Savarese.
That would be great. So we should get in and coordinate with him.
Absolutely. And I don't know how that would work. Lee County did come to the last meeting we had, and they seemed to be on board. But certainly talking to your commissioners and encouraging them to work towards that effort would help, because I think there is some hesitation a little bit.
Who represented Lee County? Do you recall who represented Lee County at that?
Yes, it was Dave Harmon. That would be the deputy county manager.
Well, that kind of says a lot of what I wanted to bring up, which is we should be working closely with Sanibel. The regional compact, you know, sounds like definitely something we want to tie into. Aptum sounds like they want to start sharing. Can we get a copy of that report at all? I mean, I know they paid you a lot of money for it, but is it online? Is it accessible?
That's available. And I can send you the Corps had a presentation for Collier County.
Yeah.
If I sent that to you, you can get some ideas that are embedded in that. They have like 10 alternatives.
That'd be great. I want to just share it with this other committee as well.
Savarese is doing parts of the county that the Corps is not studying, so they're trying to push, try to leverage the two resources that they have. So they have Savarese doing some part of the county and the Corps.
Well, that's great. And I was going to say that one of the members of the panel committee identified a document that Kiowa Island had done. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's actually a very impressive document, and they've been working on it for quite a while in terms of resiliency and storminess issues and so on. So it looked pretty impressive. They're a city. They have a lot of money. They're a pretty aggressive country up there. People come out and have a lot of money invested in their properties and the big tourism spot, and they have lots of reason to protect their assets. Pretty small population, although it's, what, five times larger than we are, something like that. In any event, there's lots of good examples out there, and I think what we're trying to do with our budget and in asking for this help from Nancy is just to say, take a step in the direction of what can we do and better understand it. Hans, I know you sent out a piece on it indicating that we're limited in that on the bay side, we're dealing with private properties, and seaward of the private properties are sovereign lands that the state owns and so on. My view was that is not much unlike what existed on the beach side in the early days of renourishment, which is we dealt with a lot of private properties, and there's challenges there that might require legislation. I don't know when the Beach Preservation Act was created, but that addresses some of those challenges. But my feeling is that regionally, we're going to have to deal with a lot of the same issues. Sanibel will have them, Fort Myers Beach. There's all these bayside areas where what do you do? A lot of questions, and seawalls that, lots of people have issues with. So there's a lot of work. So this is simply to say, take a step in the direction of trying to pay attention to it and work and find out where the resources are, and some of that will take some money. So. We're asking for it. Any questions, commissioners, on this subject? It's a big megillah. Okay, commissioners, we're in a subject now called commissioners' comments. Sorry. Administrator's report first.
I just want to real quick. We are going to be out of the office at the FASD meetings on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, tomorrow, so we have our voicemail and our phones saying that.
Thank you for letting us know, but as consultants, I don't think you need to tell us.
Well,
yeah,
sure. Close. So, employees. We shall know. Okay. You should have received, or will very soon be receiving, financial disclosure forms sent by the Supervisor of Elections. They went out, according to the office, at 5/24, and they are due back July 1st.
May 24th. I sent mine back already,
okay.
But yeah.
Great.
So did I.
And usually, you may have done one more recently for the panel or for the. Okay.
Just a reminder on those.
Ask me about it. It's very good work to do it right.
If it doesn't need notarized, just bring it by. Okay. And then I'm very sad to report that we did receive Dave's formal letter of resignation effective September 27th, I believe. So.
I think we. We will miss Dave. Dave, how many years? 25 years? Did we show you?
It'll be 25 this August.
Okay.
If I'm around on the island and so forth, I'm going to be as hopeful as possible because this is an incredible organization. Can I
go right ahead, please? Yes.
Are you done with your report?
I am. Yes.
Can I make it part of my commissioner comment?
You can, certainly. Yes.
It's been very interesting for me. I got involved with, we started this Captive Island Historical Society, and what I've learned and through research and that about erosion on the island, it blows my mind, this subject, and what the CEP did, and the engineers and all that. It literally saved the island. I really believe that. And so it's an incredible subject, and I will always, when I'm here, I'm going to be always supportive of what you do. And you seem to have always, we have a great team. Wow. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Dave. Maybe you'll let us have a little celebration.
No, I won't do that, but I...
awake, perhaps.
Yeah.
I sent you a nice cheese basket.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
So did you have anything from the administrative report?
No, sir.
Okay. Then, as far as commission's comments, you know, Dave, I just really thank you for your service. I mean, it's been, you know, as someone who, a stakeholder, I can't imagine what Captive would be like without what the CPD has done and what you, as a member of this and just as a member of the community, Jensen, is a really special guy.
I haven't done that much, but I would like to tell real quickly how I got on the board. one of the commissioners had left the board. I knew nothing about the CPD, zero. And whoever was running, it went to my father, Red Johnson, and said, Red, why don't you come on the board? And our dad was always thinking of getting his children involved, and so my dad came to me. I was so scared of that thought of me. I never gotten involved, and I didn't think I was smart enough or anything. But what I learned from being part of this, really, my manhood. Because you had to deal with different people's opinions and thoughts. You had to care for the community. So I'm so grateful I got pushed into it, and it's been an incredible experience, and I would encourage other people to do it. Thank you for listening.
I just have a couple things. One, Hans, you had mentioned earlier, suggestion that there has to be several communities in Florida that have faced the issue of how to quantify a land value, you know, such as the Gulfway. How do we follow up on that? And then secondly, there's also the Dr. Strong, $2,000 commercial properties. What in the process are we going to? How do we follow up on that? And do we get that information about who's going to find these other vehicles to determine asset values?
Well. If you're asking me, I would have expected Bill to have been able to, because I know we're not the only project that he's ever done in terms of apportionment for beach restoration. So he should have something that he's worked on in the past. And if he has not, then this is an opportunity for administration to talk with perhaps other economists and use that as an entry as a question mark, and then see if we can get them interested in what our business is about.
Okay.
That's.
We were looking to use this week as a good time to have contacts throughout the state.
Okay.
To build that network.
You follow up on your comment, you know that Bill's worked in other apportionments. That was a question that we raised. Have we directed that question to Dr. Strong? What answers have we gotten? What other apportionments, what other communities have he worked with? And where has he used this specific methodology?
We talked to him about it. We have not received it back. We need to follow up with that.
Okay, that's important. Again, we're going to need to share that with people who don't like the methodology. So, James, if you don't mind me asking, you had mentioned, and I didn't completely absorb it, that if we had closed, just let the patch close or never reopened it, the erosion on Sanibel would never occur. Did I hear you say
no,
that?
No, I said it would be less. So because of the pass, the way we manage the pass,
okay,
puts pressure on the erosion of Sanibel. So we tend to, in addition to the impacts from the structure on Captiva, we also get impacts from that channel meandering as it comes out of the pass. And the way we manage the pass has a big impact on Northern Sanibel's beaches.
Okay.
In that, you know, R110 down to like R114 area. And so what I was saying is if you let the pass fill in and the Captiva and Sanibel are one, you're no longer going to have pressure from the pass on Northern mm-hmm. Sanibel is what I was getting at. And Michelle, you're the engineer who's working on this. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. But still, Sanibel feels it's in their best interest to keep the pass open. Is that correct?
So I think the technical advisory committee that worked on the blind pass inland management study all felt that it was in the best interest of all of our communities to maintain the pass in the open state because of the water quality issues and the benefits to all the properties along that channel, Roosevelt Channel, Pine Island Sound, and of course, just the way we manage the pass inland.
Okay. Okay, but there was an unintended consequence due to this, which is, in which Sanibel is, I don't know, with the TDC, I don't know, well, ultimately, who's going to fund, who funds the renourishment of that, the areas that lose?
Yeah, so there was an interlocal agreement that was in place, and because of the interlocal agreement that was put in place in the 90s, there was 25,000 cubic yards per year that was put into that.
Per year
agreement from Captiva as part of your renourishment you placed on Northern Sanibel. That agreement expired in 2015. It hasn't been renewed yet. We all felt that it would be best to wait till the blind pass inland management study and plan was completed, and then we would come to the table and renegotiate an interlocal agreement, decide, you know, what we want to do. But I think we all decided it's in our best interest to maintain the pass in open state. Recognize that it's not all Captiva structure that's impacting the beach, but you know, we'll have to, you know, that's for the policymakers on Sanibel and Captiva to discuss and come to an agreement. Also Lee County, of course.
James, I think that
just for clarity, did you say 25,000 cubic yards per year
and then nourishment,
I was gonna clarify that I think there's another 25,000 that's committed by the TDC, if I'm not mistaken. I think they.
No, I don't believe so.
I thought so.
It was 25,000 a year
each.
Every 8 years, no. Just 125,000.
Oh, but then paid for
200,000 every 8 years.
And
it right. Okay.
It's cumulative. It changed the cost sharing when you did that.
Okay. Now.
So you get more money from the state, and theoretically, you get more money from
of course,
the county when you do that program too.
Right. Of course, you guys are using your project and including our access on Sanibel's beaches from Bowman's Beach all the way up to Blind Pass. So you're getting a benefit when it comes to the state project.
Sure.
So it was kind of a win-win for us to partner like that, but I don't know what the next interlocal agreement's gonna look like. So.
And could you have any chance, I have not seen, can you send us me a copy of that agreement that expired in 2015? Would you mind?
Carolyn has
Okay, we have it, okay. And then, but again, getting back to the whole thing about unintended consequences, and there's no one knows less about water around here than I do, despite where I live, but the unintended consequences of opening up that pass, you know, deteriorates from the beach at on Sanibel, correct? Isn't that what you suggest?
So you're suggesting that when that pass is in an open state,
yeah,
depending on how you manage it, it can affect the erosion of Northern Sanibel. I am saying that.
Yeah. So, and that's the only thing, that's one of my concerns that I voiced earlier.
Right.
If it opens in a different way on this blind man, this project that you guys are working, there's a chance that there's an unintended consequence on the bay side of Captiva, but Michelle, you're saying it's not very large. Is that correct?
Let me bring up one point.
Thank you.
The opening of Redfish Pass in the 1920s. Was kind of like the beginning of the whip down Captiva. So some of the consequences that occurred at Blind Pass were partially caused by that 40 years later. So and that's hard to separate that
right.
out from the groin and all the other effects that are going on down there. So
we'll take it a step further. The opening of Redfish Pass actually was the start of the erosion throughout Captiva, if I'm
not
mistaken.
That's correct. When we got down to blind pass, the first thing somebody did was stick a little groin out there to protect the other end of the bridge. And that became a focus of what was affecting Sanibel, but it was not necessarily the whole reason that the situation began.
And inlets in general, I think you've told me in the past, will typically cause these kinds of erosion problems.
Yes, because usually they build a flood shoal and they build a ebb shoal, and that sand has to come from someplace, and it's the adjacent beaches.
Got it.
So, and just so I can finish, an important component of this new inlet management plan is that we're not going to be cutting through the dredge template. That allows transport of sand to move down to Sanibel, on northern Sanibel, and hopefully that'll offset some of the impacts of how we manage the pass as well. So that could, you know, have an effect on the properties within, a positive benefit on the properties within along Captiva as well, because we're changing where that channel is going to be. So, you know, I'll leave that to Michelle, the modelers, but based on what we looked at, it didn't appear, based on the modeling, that there would be any significant or even insignificant impacts on properties along Captiva as a result.
Thank you.
It looked like it improved how we managed the pass today, and that's an important point.
Thank you for humoring me. Thank you. And the last thing is, I misspoke earlier, Dave. I said that members of the Captiva Island Historical Society had impugned the integrity of the district, and I'd like to restate that. I will say residents and property owners in the village that may or may not be part of the Historical Society have in fact impugned the integrity of us as individuals and us as a body. And so not necessarily, I don't know whether the members of the Historical Society, I just want to protect us.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Thank you, because I wasn't aware of anyone, but yes, there is in the community. And thank you, it's all good.
Are you through?
Sorry about that.
No problem. One thing is, Carolyn, when she advised me on Friday that David submitted his resignation, I asked that she run an advertisement. And frankly, Tiffany, you may be willing to give us some free publicity on this too. Thank you. Yeah. But the idea is, we want to get the word out to the community. We've been saying this for a while, but now it's very real. And we want to get the word out to the community that we have an open position and ask people, and we should spell out the qualifications that are required, namely that they be a registered voter on Captiva, and maybe some details of what's expected of them if they should come into this position. Most of that's spelled out in the rules of procedure. So it doesn't need to be too involved, but get the word out. Okay. I discovered back in 2006 that there was a position from a newspaper article in the then Captiva Current, and submitted, you know, my name and for election. And then when I met with the board to advise them of what I had done and so on, I think it was Dave who said, you know, well, we have the opening now, you don't have to wait till November, come on board. So I got roped into this 6 months earlier, perhaps. I'm kidding. But in any event, but I think we do want to do an advertisement. I do want to indicate that a property owner had reached out to me and said that he had received an email from Hans, actually, asking. And in that email, which I saw, it also said something about Harry Kaiser might be leaving soon. So I called up Harry because Carolyn had told me he had taken a fall recently, and he wasn't able to be here today. He says he's pretty confident he'll be here in August. I did invite him to be on the phone. He was not willing to do that. And so that, you know, that is what it is. But I did, in the course of the conversation, we talked about a lot of things, and then he, you know, he mentioned about wanting to be here. He's going to be 90 soon, but he wants to be here for as long as he is healthy and able. So I did say, is there any chance you're planning on leaving? You know, I've raised that to him before because there's been rumors and whatnot. People have said something, but he's pretty much adamant that he has no near-term intention of stepping down. So just to let you know about that. I'm a little bit interested, since this subject came up, of you know, reaching out to people to see who's willing to come on board, et cetera. I assume, and I'd have to ask Nancy this, or you could ask, look at the procedures and ask Nancy, but I'm assuming that we actually need a vacancy before we're going to vote on replacement. Is that correct?
I would assume the same thing, but I don't know for certain.
Yeah. Okay. So well, let's find out about that, because there's a lot of people in the community have indicated to me personally that they're interested. You know, one of them was not a U.S. citizen, so she's still working on that process. So we said you got to be a U.S. citizen to vote here, and you need to be a registered voter. Several are owners and property owners who would otherwise qualify, but don't have Florida driver's licenses and not registered. Several of them have since told me they've gotten their license and they may go forward and register to vote. They're uncertain of that. One gentleman who lives out at South Seas, who's very actively involved with the Fed side of this and whatnot over the years, he's been active in the community, has stepped down from some other roles, and he's indicated he's interested. But he's interested in talking, so we're discussing it, okay? He would be an asset, and at the same time, I'm not sure he can step up to the kind of involvement of time and so on and so forth, okay? He did raise the question about, he travels around a lot, and if he could be on the phone. And so I think that's important for us to know when we explain to people. It doesn't all have to be in an ad. But my understanding is Nancy has told us in the past, if we have a physical quorum here, like today, Harry and Bob could have been on the phone,
yes,
and voted,
right,
even though they were not here physically,
yes,
present. So again, I'm saying that to people. I'm saying as long as we have a physical quorum, and we typically do, and you're traveling, if you want to call in and listen or cast a vote or whatever, that's possible. So I just want to be clear of all the rules so that as people ask questions, I do want to remind everybody that when Bob Walter first submitted his application, I think when Jim Boyle was leaving, Kathy Rooker had told him the position had been filled by a qualified candidate, and then he got back to me and asked me what's going on, and I said, no, it's not administration that makes that decision, it's the board. Please persist with your application. And so it turned out there were two candidates, Rich Stegman and Bob, and in the meeting that we were discussing it, before we had to choose between the two, Doris mentioned she was going to resign the following month, and she said if it would help matters for me to accelerate it and leave today, and we wound up choosing both Rich Stegman and Bob Walter. So, but I think that, again, the vacancy has to be there before we actually take a vote on the replacement. And as to Dave, it's hard to believe that there was this naive young man that was nervous about coming on board, but Dave, you know, you played a big role in the community, and I appreciate it, and you and the Jensen family have had a hand in a lot of things, Captiva, and I've enjoyed, you know, working with you, and I wish you'd let us take you out for a drink or something, you know, when you step
forward. Captiva's been great to me. It was really easy.
Anyway, and then on the Historical Society, I think it's a great idea that we participate in that in some way. I do think it is important. I mean, most you know, producers and publishers and reporters and so on are not going to have somebody, you know, wanting to edit everything that they do. But we might be able to get some memo of understanding ahead of time as to the nature of what they're going to say and how they're going to cover it. So maybe there's a way to deal with that. So
yeah,
we don't
and
have to
I,
be at risk.
I've been thinking, and I know this isn't a discussion thing, but I'm going to break the rules if I can.
Go right ahead.
I'm thinking maybe someone from the CPD other than me, because I'm prejudiced, could be Sid involved, you know, to protect. Well, at any rate, thank you. I do want to say, Mike, what you brought up is, I'm glad we delayed it, because I'm concerned with the quality of the product, and I'm also concerned about the CPD. And both are important. Thank you for holding up the ship.
One other thing that I might have missed it on the agenda, obviously. There's been a lot covered and so on. But I know the website, was that mentioned? I know it might have been in the minutes from the last meeting, or was it mentioned today? Was that on our agenda to talk about? I know you had a company you had a company you're looking to have do some work on.
We're hiring a new one tomorrow. We're going to be at the conference. And they have a system where they only deal with special districts.
Okay.
So we're going to use their software.
Okay.
So we went into ADA compliance and everything's to speed on it.
So just remind me, so have we already voted for a certain amount of money, or is it just in the annual budget? Or because I think you named a specific company in the minutes
the
last time.
Yeah, I did, and they came in at $3,200 to start. The company tomorrow is going to charge us $75 a month.
Okay. So what you're saying is that that other previous company you're not moving forward with. I was going to ask what it costs, but and you think you've got a much better alternative, and that's great. So, and in general, these kinds of committees, I'm glad you discovered it, or these organizations, you know, leveraging that and having contacts would be very beneficial for us. So.
It worked out well. They're from California. They'll be here in
New York. Okay. Terrific. So, having said that, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
I'll make a motion. Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, meeting adjourned. Thanks, everybody, for being so patient with us here today. And Aptum, are you rushing out the door, or can you stay for a minute or two?
No, I haven't retired yet, and he's retired.
We have resolutions. You want to sign?
Okay.
I think I've been here actually 27 minutes.
With yeah, I think you have been here longer. Yeah. I really appreciate everything you do for me.
I
don't know what it isn't our property.
It is.
I know that.
I think it's just it's an expectation from old parcel.
It's a great question because the placement of it doesn't seem to be in line with the property or the inside.
Well, it seems to me that everything in front of W. I think Johnson's
spreading out. No, you're okay. Do you have the spelling of his name?
I'm just thinking now.
I wanted to ask you first.
No, I don't think that's our problem. Well, no, I would love to. When you were talking about 4 years ago, when
that's why all the rules were out in the price.
Right, and so that section right there, the road got changed, and it came back to the main side, as we know it. And so that's why that access. But it doesn't have to have parking with it to get value.
They're these teeny tiny little numbers, right?
Yeah. I was trying to look at the actual, and I found the budget, and I saw where you guys were.
Yeah, I didn't. I actually had to do a new one, so it wasn't in that one.
Yeah, and I was just like,
right?
Is that the minimum? You use it.
I said 5 to 10. It's not so much the minimum.
Sorry,
you
need
one here.
Many dead trees.
Yeah, I know. I actually said that. I was like, oh my God, they're killing trees today.
So we go with the $600,000.
Yeah.
Is what they want to do.
Okay, yes.
Total.
And that's why I had the 2025 as a new year. Okay, so
it's actually a 31.8% increase from last year.
And that is.
And that puts the.
So not as far as. And when you're talking about increase, you're talking about the millage increase?
No. It's actually a 31% increase in our expenses and incomes.
Got it.
So
okay.
In our operating
in the budget.
Budget.
In the budget.
Yeah.
Right.
31% increase in the budget. And then the millage rate would be three zeros,
I was going to say, I thought it was a four, and I couldn't find my four anywhere. And I was like, where did I get
10 and then 400, and then 45.
Got it. Okay, so 31.
It doesn't generally go out that far. It usually only goes out to like here.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, so that's what you're looking at, and then I can pull the more. Okay, got it. All right, I think I'm good. I'm like always, I can come down.
Okay. Send the world into a spin. You know, property appraiser sends us So we get the notice that the trim notice will be coming out. And when they do that, they send us a tentative value of all of the taxable items. So it's like the taxable value. And like that number is this.
They put out their early estimate.
Right. 1,460,000, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
So from there, we take 95% of that amount. We speak 95% of the people.
Got it.
5% of the people. Whatever.
Okay.
But I didn't say that.
Okay.
I don't know what happened to the other 5%. Anyway, so we take that number, and that's the number we need to use to try and figure out how we'll get our money.
Gotcha.
So that's where our...
Gotcha. And like you said, you guys are shooting for, instead of the 450 again, looking to raise.
Yeah. And when we, you know, when they finally decide where we can move our money to, that's $250 will actually almost have $60,000 in interest that we're losing because it's just sitting in the bank.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Points or reserves or whatever. And then TDC grants, you know, we're always kind of looking for extras.
Yeah. Quick question. So at this point, Haven't the public hearings, those meeting dates have not been set yet, correct? They have not.
Okay, what happens now is from this point, we have an idea of where we want to be, and we are waiting for them to send us the actual final number. Once we get that final number on July 1st, then we'll take, then we'll take that final number. We give that number back to the office, and they send out the trim notice.
Got
it. Figure out everybody's taxes and send out the trim notice.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. If I have any questions, I'll shoot you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks. We are going to be out of the office, but I am going to be checking my emails.
Okay. Yeah,
I usually don't get my cell number. Leave me a message.
I don't know who owns that, because I don't think people cross the insight curve. You extend them across.